How are you? How are you?
I'm very well.
Good. We are about to start. But you see, members will be coming in as we proceed. But unfortunately, we don't have the luxury of time. We have to do 9 of you today. We have to start. We are most welcome. Seat reserved. Water is before you. If the engine warm up, you can cool it down. If question I ask, you don't understand the question, you need clarity. You got the right to indicate so that we will repeat. We make sure that you understand the question which has been asked and so on. So, members will just introduce themselves, probably so that you can know them, or probably to first time. What we can do is that when they are asking you questions, they will indicate that member so and so when they ask you questions. But you are most welcome. We are about to start. I just want to make sure that you are in a right meeting or interview. The one which you are conducting is in relation to nominated people to serve on the MDDA board. Are you in the right one? Okay, no, thank you very much. When we start the interview, if you speak, just press the button. There's a button that you must press. But immediately when you stop to finish, then press it off again, so that the system can be able to record. I'm Skumbuzo Eric Colon, chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Communications. I'll ask you the very easy first question. The members will take it from them. As I've indicated, that 36 of you were nominated, one withdrew. We then had, in fact, two withdrew. Then we had 34. We then showed no, one withdrew. We had 35. We shortlisted 10 for the interview. One withdrew out of the 10. We had 9 remaining. Now you are 9. What do you think you must be the one of the two?
Why do I think I should be one of the two?
Why do you think you should be the one of the two?
Well, Chair, I wouldn't have applied for the position or been nominated for the position if my board of directors didn't think I was appropriate for the position. But I think my experience in media and television stands for itself in terms of my CV that I submitted. I'm very well connected in the industry in South Africa and overseas. But also, I'm working very closely with communities on transformation in the industry. And I've spent the past 5 years working for the Provincial Department of Transport and Public Works on the World Cup, where I'm their World Cup director. Again, working very closely with the communities in developing opportunities for them for upliftment through what came through for the World Cup, and also working with the minibus taxi industry, amongst others, to help transform that industry. So I think I'm pretty well qualified in both areas.
Thank you, Member. What I was said there.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My name is Susana Rebecca Vasusana Bede. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Communication. I just add just three questions. Number one is in regard to the funding model of the MDDA. Are you familiar with the model? If you are familiar with the model, can you tell us if in this current situation, current year, is it still relevant? Is it still working? And if there are changes that need to be made, if you can last share that with us. Also, in the relevancy of MDDA, if you can tell us, is MDDA still relevant as it is? Or do you think we need to clap with these other structures to form something? I don't know. But I just want to check if, according to your building, MDDA is still relevant as a structure. The first one, Chairperson, is about you as a new leader. If by any chance you get appointed to the board, what new things do you think must be brought in MDDA? You are a new leaf, things have been happening there. Obviously, I think you have gone through the report of the MDDA, then you are aware of the attempts, what they want to do. What do you think must happen? Thank you, Dr.
Thank you. Ms. Davis.
Okay. Thank you for the question. In terms of the funding model, I'm not totally familiar with the funding model that's used for the MDDA. I suspect it's similar to the funding model that we currently have with the Film Commission in the Western Cape and its government funding. It does have its challenges. We're funded by the provincial government and the City of Cape Town, with some funding coming through from the DTI and support from the National Film and Video Foundation. There are many requirements in terms of that funding, in terms of the mandate that we were given and the evidence and reporting procedures, which tend to bog down the process and actually sidetrack some of what we're trying to deliver because of the requirements for reporting. And I think that's one of the challenges that needs to be addressed in terms of streamlining the process and cutting through the red tape so the money's channeled to the right people and for the projects that they were intended to be channeled to, rather than overly becoming bureaucratic within the context of the organisation. The funding model I think is probably okay, but I think there is room to lobby for other funding partners. I mean, currently we're, for example, looking at partnering with some of the major retail banks as part of their corporate social responsibility programs, and I think there's opportunity there. In terms of the relevance of the MDDA, I think it's an extremely relevant organisation. One of the things I'm encountering locally is that a lot of people within the community feel very neglected and don't feel connected to the bigger picture in South Africa and the bigger international picture as well. And I think giving them access to media and empowering them with media gives a voice, and that voice can be heard, and we're finding it very appropriate. I know that you're supporting some of my projects as well, currently in the Cape Flats. And I think without the support of the MDDA, those projects actually wouldn't exist. So I think the relevance is there, and I think it's also very relevant in terms of the transformation that's taking place within certainly the film and television industry and the media industry generally. It's an important role that needs to be played out because it is now creating a platform for growth within the communities. And it's essentially putting a lot of pressure on the existing industries around media to allow more healthy competition and to open it up away from the cartels that have existed for some years. And we're finding actually that a lot of what we're doing in the Film Commission is paying dividends, because we're now creating emerging businesses in the media industry who are beginning to get into a position where they can compete on the international market for the production of commercials and advertising, for example. And, you know, the work that we're doing with Cape Town Television as well and general community broadcasting is working on that basis. You asked the question if I was appointed, what new things must be brought in. Well, I think efficiencies need to be brought into a lot of organisations these days because of the funding models that and requirements from government funding. excuse me. So, you know, there are issues around corporate governance and systems that need to be put in place in many organisations, and I'm not familiar with your systems. I'm not being critical, it's just a comment. But certainly, in terms of capacity building and marketing strategy and business acumen, there's a lot of opportunity there for bringing new ways of working and new ways of looking at things to assist with the communities. And also, media is changing quite significantly and very quickly. And oddly, what we're finding is that a lot of the teachers and lecturers in some of the media schools that we're working with are being left behind by the students, because the students are more familiar with the technology, more familiar with the software, and the manner in which people are communicating with cell phones, for example, where they're making movies on cell phones and transferring them to DVDs and selling them in the communities. There's a program that we're trying to put in place, which is teaching the teacher, where we're looking at how they can learn from the students so that that cycle continues. And I think that's something that needs to be addressed as well, the new media. And technology that's being used is changing a lot of things, and we need to keep up with that. I'm not sure if that's answered either of your questions. I hope it has. Okay.
Thank you. Honorable Muruto, Lazzi, Van der Berg,
thank you, Peterson. I'm sorry for coming in a little bit late. I wasn't sure when I was starting. But that's on what I hope I'm right, you are Mr. Dennis Lee. Yes. I've been listening to you, and you are really giving us the synopsis of what we need. But I just wanted to deepen what you are saying, to understand whether the diversity we are talking about is being implemented at this moment in terms of the rural and the previously disadvantaged. Do you think much has been done by the MDDA so far? Now that you're talking about the new technology, I think you do understand that in the rural areas, when we talk about the technology, those young people, they don't even understand. They have no access to anything of that sort. And I think with what you have just told us now, you have the inclination of what we need. What would be your focus exactly in terms of the rural area and the previous disadvantage to bring them up to this economy? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Very interesting question, because it's something we're debating every week in our office as well. And one of the ironies we have is that I'm representing the CED Film Commission. I'm their CEO, that's my day job. But ironically, the bulk of the film industry and television industry in the Western Cape is in Cape Town. And we're challenged with trying to reach out to the rural communities. We're currently looking at establishing some sort of office in George, for example, to reach out to those communities. But there is a massive challenge. And just to give you an example, we advertised for two posts 2 months ago, and the advertisements, like yours for this position, were very specific. We had 100 applicants for two posts. Of those applicants, 50 didn't make it past the opening of the envelope because they failed to address issues in the advertisement on the envelope itself. When we opened the envelope, of the remaining 50 candidates, 25 of those didn't provide the information we requested. So what we've done is embarked on a business acumen training course, very basic, for people to understand how to write a CV, how to apply for a job, into the presentation styles, business etiquette, that sort of thing, because I hear what you're saying, and a lot of people don't even know where to start, and I think this is a massive education program that needs to take place for people to access industry. But one of the areas we've been looking at is media development through the schools. We're trying to put school programs in place. We've currently got a program with YMM that's running through about 25 schools. We want to broaden that throughout the rural areas, And we also want to start working with the Department of Education and the libraries, for example, because I think libraries could be very beneficial to some of these communities, even if it's a mobile library where they've got access to technology and teaching facilities through the media. And you know, empowering them as well with community radio. I mean, I noticed from your website, you've got a footprint of South Africa with all the projects that are running, and there are some big gaps in the geography that you're covering, and I think some of those areas need to be addressed. And certainly, you know, we're talking about media specifically here, but it's not just about film and television, it's about radio, it's about the press, it's a whole raft of opportunities. But I think empowering people by giving them access to the internet and creating community websites that can be bought into internationally is a very good way of doing things. We're working currently with the World Film Collective, who are a charity based in London, and we've developed an outreach program with them. They're working with the impoverished communities in the UK, who are at the heart of the London riots a couple of months ago. And we put them in touch with some of the impoverished communities around Khayelitsha and Mitchell's Plain. And we've created a conversation that's being developed through use of cell phone technology downloaded onto DVD. And we're exchanging those DVDs between the communities. And we've even been approached now from Mexico, who want their communities involved in this conversation. And ultimately, the aim is to link people internationally who've got common aims and objectives, which is about employment, which is about finding new ways of enabling themselves to get some employment, but also new ways of communication as well. Ultimately, we will be submitting a documentary, a 90-minute documentary that's come from the work we're doing with these communities, which will be entered into the upcoming South African Film Festival in London, which again will bring a lot of these issues to international attention, and we're hoping, as a consequence of that, there will be funding comes from other agencies. I'm not sure if that touches the points you wanted me to. Yeah, thank you.
And
thanks. I am honourable that I am a member of this committee. What I want to know is that as a practitioner in this industry, and that has been working for a number of years, have you ever had a relation with MDDA before? Sorry. If yes, would you describe the previous encounter with the MDDA? Thanks.
I'm sorry to say that I've had no interaction with the MDDA. And it's come as a bit of a disappointment that we haven't, when I began to understand what this organization does. Because I think the partnership that we could have been developing with the Film Commission, and possibly, I don't know what relationships you have with other film commissions around the country and the National Film and Video Foundation, I think it would be quite important to enter some of those partnerships. We have a partnership with the DTI on funding for outward-bound missions on investment, and we have a partnership with the National Film and Video Foundation on their education and training program. So we work to run common programs throughout the Western Cape that they do nationally. And unfortunately, we haven't had a relationship with the MDDA. I've only become aware of it very recently. And you know, if I'm not invited to sit on the board, I'd certainly like a relationship moving forward.
Thank you. Honorable Van der Weck.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Mr. Lilly. As I went through your CV, I think you are a person that understands communication. You understand the complexity of the of the South African situation, all the different people and all the inequalities in our society. You understand all this. And you've mentioned a very important thing in your opening remarks about new media. I think if we think of the MDDA and the role the MDDA has to play in South Africa, we normally think at the established sort of media things, radio, we think of the studios and television. You have to have a lot of money to start something like that. But you mentioned the new media. Can you just give more information how you think the MDDA can use new media? And as we know, the ordinary newspapers and the media in South Africa, they are starting to think different about conveying the messages and everything, and the competition is very harsh. Can you give us just an idea of your thinking about the new media? That is actually the future of media in South Africa. But then, thinking about new media, as you know and we all know, especially in the rural areas, some of those people don't have, for instance, the internet or whatever. So we must find a way to reach out to the people without the necessary skills whatsoever. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Lee.
Thank you. It's quite a challenge, I have to say. For the reasons that you've given, the impoverished communities don't necessarily have access to the internet. It's possible that they don't even have phone lines or connectivity through a wireless process. And the affordability issue around laptops, tablets, that sort of thing is a challenge, which is why we've been looking at local community opportunities through libraries and mobile libraries, this sort of thing, so we can actually bring that sort of communication to the communities. But I think there's a lot of work to be done with not only the national broadcaster, but also with Telkom and others to try and bring that connectivity at a low cost into the communities so that they do have access. And during the World Cup, I was working very closely with Microsoft and their corporate social responsibility program. And there are ways and means of bringing these opportunities through sponsorship deals from some of the major corporates who deal with the new technology. So the practical challenge is a challenge in itself, and that's, you've got to look at that in terms of the funding model and sponsorship and just getting access to the net. So it brings you to the fallback position about printed media, because that's the most obvious to get to in the short term in the communities and how you access that. But my aspiration would be, as you're implying, once you get into the new media, the cost of entry is actually quite low. The training that needs to take place is, again, not as challenging as traditional media. Even what we're finding now with the traditional Hollywood movie making that's coming to Cape Town currently with studios. A lot of it is more efficient than it was 20 years ago. The numbers of people on a set, for example, are less. Lighting requirements are less, sound requirements are less, because the technology has changed. But one thing we have noticed, certainly in South Africa, is that because it's an emerging industry, essentially, the understanding of the technology and the skills is actually higher than it is elsewhere in the world in the established countries, because the established countries have gone through the traditional filmmaking and television process, whereas here we're looking at new ways of working, new innovative ways of thinking around getting the best use, because the investment is less, so we're looking at different things. But I think in terms of accessing media, what sprang to mind when you were asking the question really was things like internet radio and internet TV stations. And I think that's definitely a way forward, because it's low cost, it's easy access, and it's got a massive reach. If you look at Cape Town Television, for example, That's a low cost base. They've got an audience reach of 1.5 million. But that's not going out through the internet, as far as I'm aware. Their access could be in the millions around the world if they needed to be, and if they get the right product and start branding it effectively, that could be bought, for example, by the public broadcasting authority in the USA and give them a bigger network. And then you start, you know, when you look at the numbers and the reach to get, you get the interest from the advertisers. Because they have got, you know, a demonstrable audience. The advertisers will want to hitch themselves to that. And then you can start talking about the communities making the advertisements. You know, they become involved in the design and the message and the whole feel of the product. So it becomes something else. And you're challenging the norm. You're challenging the traditional ways of doing things. And I know there's a lot of enjoyment here that comes from what comes out of the USA, but there's also a lot of criticism that we're copying too much stuff and there's not enough of our own material going out there. And I think this is a great opportunity to do that because it's giving people a voice which they need.
Madam Glenn.
Thank you, Chairperson. The last question, my name is Julie Killian. I'm a member of this committee. The previous question actually touched on what I wanted to ask you specifically, with your experience and understanding, because through your current position, it seems that you are working in some of the marginalized communities, etc., to help develop the necessary skills. You have referred to thinking out of the box and an opportunity for local content development, etc. In your understanding, what would be essential to overcome what is currently a position where we have a funding for specific community projects? Sometimes it is for capital equipment, sometimes it is to cover some operational expenditure, and the experience is that very often small media companies survive as long as they have this seed money through the MDDA, and thereafter some of these projects just simply cannot survive as they tackle. On the other hand, there are excellent examples of some of the media productions that really survive and ultimately thrive because they have identified the right target market. Now, this delicate balance, how do you see would one develop appropriate products and help establish and develop the necessary skills throughout the country, especially if we look at the MDDA Act? It specifically refers to marginalized communities. How do you see, through your experience, in the film industry, that you could actually engage and bring value to the MDDA board, so that could also some success rates could be replicated in this industry. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Getting some challenging questions this morning. Again, it's something we're wrestling with in the Film Commission. I get, on average, 3 filmmakers a day coming in to ask me for funding or for equipment or whatever, and I can't give them it because I give it to one, I've got to give it to all, and you've got to develop programs where the people with the passion and the expertise or willingness need to be supported. We find a lot of people are jumping on the bandwagon because it seems like an easy way to make some money, and they do exactly what you said. You know, they get involved, they think they're a filmmaker, and then realize that they don't have the vision, if you like. And what we do with them is try and talk to them about, you know, you don't necessarily have to be a film director or a film producer. You know, know, you could be a cameraman or a lighting specialist and still be involved in the industry. But and also just the footprint, you know, we talk about the multiplier. The film industry, well, film and television industry is worth about $5.5 billion to the Western Cape. And we've got about 12,500 people employed in it. But the multiplier, there's a 2.3 multiplier for every rand that's spent directly in the industry. There's money that's spent in hotels and catering and transport and security and set design and costumes and all the rest of it. I mean, there is a much broader picture that the people don't necessarily understand. Not through any ignorance, because they're just not aware that there are other opportunities. And I think part of what we do is say, you can still be in an industry, but you're affiliated to it. Not everybody can make films, because it's a fairly specialist skill. Not everybody can be a talk show host on the radio, because it's a specialist skill. But, you know, let's look at what else you can do, and that's part of what we're doing in terms of our training programs. We're training them to the business people, and we're training them to go out there and have an opportunity to make a living. And I think at this stage, that's probably the best we can do. You know, there are good and bad plumbers, there are good and bad electricians, there are good and bad filmmakers. You know, I mean, not everybody makes it, and I think that's part of the message. You know, sometimes you've got to try something and you find that you excel at it, and other times you find, well, actually, that's not what I thought it was going to be. Maybe I should look at something else, but still be part of it, you know. I'm not sure of that. So, okay.
Marakala?
Thank you. Mr. Lila, I forgot to introduce myself. My name is Rosalia Mruga, and sorry about that. I'm a member of this committee. I just want to come back to you and ask you about your understanding of what we have to transform and how we have to transform some of these areas. And my question will be based on maybe your familiarity to the trend of ownership and control of media in South Africa. I'm talking about the local newspapers, the usual ones that they talk and knock and talk in our areas. These newspapers have a fair amount of advertisement, and they vary in many degrees. But what is most interesting is that the local newspapers that I'm talking about are neither owned by the community. And in terms of the MDDA Act, that was one of the parts, the priorities that we agreed on. And these are owned by some conglomerates in the media. I think you are very familiar with them. And the communities that they are supposed to be served, they are not even, they are not involved, the communities are not involved in the distribution, the printing of these newspapers. And I just want to know what you would do about that in terms of transforming our media. Thank you.
Mr. Lee.
Okay, thank you. Yes, and I'm fully aware that's the challenge throughout the media industry. We encounter it quite frequently in what we do. And it's something I recognised when I took up the post, that there is an intent from the funding, but the funding isn't always challenged in the right way, so that the intent is delivered. So what we've begun to do is write specific clauses into the documents and contracts and support that we're giving to some of these agencies, so that, you know, it does become a legal requirement, and some of the people that we're supporting have learned the hard way and very quickly that this is where we mean to do business, and I think that's got to be part of the monitoring and evaluation process. I also just wanted to, I know your question was really about community newspapers. service, but I just also wanted to make a comment about a lot of stories that are lost. I mean, we started looking at this last year when there was the drought in Beaufort West, which lasted about 6 weeks, and there was a lot of interesting stories, but I suspect much of the stories weren't recorded because people didn't have the facility to record. They didn't have access to digital cameras, whether it's still cameras or otherwise. They didn't necessarily have access to machines to record voices and that sort of thing. And, you know, stories come out of those communities that could be made into short documentaries or that could be made into a film or a TV program. And we started looking at why is it that we're not recognizing, you know, if, for example, the shack fire, is the community recording what happened around that shack fire? And the outcome of that, is it being recorded and is that information being passed on to other communities who are at risk from this sort of thing? And we're looking at a public service broadcasting network where some of these challenges and learnings from these experiences are passed on to other people. And that's part of, I think, what you're saying around community newspapers. Community newspapers are there for the community. They've been established for a purpose. And you should be looking at the holistic approach to it. So that, you know, the printing, the photography, the writing, the distribution, the editing is all done within the local community. And that, I suspect, is the intent behind the funding that goes to these. But it's got to be written down and it's got to be contractually binding and it's got to be monitored. And we make sure that when we are funding something like this, we have a seat on the board of that particular organization so we can ensure that the money that we're providing is being well spent and appropriately spent. I think that's a way to look at it.
Honorable Red Lomi.
Thank you, Chairperson, Mr. Lilly. I realize from your CV that you are a man of extensive experience, in particular in film and television. But coming to the topic that especially the question that my colleague, Mr. Nicky Vandenberg, asked about new media or alternative media. And taking into account the main business of the MDDA, I also realize I'm reading something here from your CV where in your capacity as CEO or commissioner of the Cape Film Commission, where we are talking about responsible for transformation in the industry to ensure fair and transparent opportunities for all. I'm sure you know that in this country we have a peculiar situation of a very dominant, established media whose ownership is concentrated in very, very few hands. And taking into account the responsibility of the MDDA to try and disperse the ownership of the media in the broader community, especially across the poor communities and the local communities. Would it be possible for you to employ that kind of experience that we have used in the film and TV industry in tackling this very mammoth, I would say, monolithic over-concentration of media ownership, of mainstream media, in order to assist the development as envisioned originally by the Constitution and in the MDDA Act? And also, would it be possible, would you have any ideas as to how mainstream media industry in general and how people could be assisted to actually develop this alternative new media so that it too can develop the necessary muscle and sustainability that is desirable. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Daly.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I could see how we could do that. It will be a challenge. You may know that my hair is white. It was not this colour a couple of years ago. I've been taking the film and television industry head on, and it's quite a challenging role because there's a lot of muscle, and they've got access to the media themselves because it's in their ownership, so they can spin whatever they feel they can spin. So it's not an easy challenge. But if you go back to the grassroots, in terms of how newspapers were developed originally, the majority of them did come out of community newspapers, and they were there to give a local message. I think it's important to have national press, and you know, so some of the larger industries are important to growth, and they stimulate other things around it. But I think it goes back to agreements against funding. You know, and we need to start unpacking what was put in place. And it may be that a lot of things were put in place in haste because people were hungry to start developing and showing that there was some reward in investment. Some reward for the investment. And corners may have been cut and people may not have been keeping their eye on the ball as closely as they should have been. So, and that is something that I found in some of the documentation I've been looking back over the last 10 years of the film commission, that what was agreed to 10 years ago is not necessarily relevant today because the industry's changed, technology's changed, and the people within the industry have changed as well. So we're constantly reviewing that process. But it will be a challenge, but I cannot see any reason why that can't be addressed. And I'm not suggesting we break down some of the conglomerates. There is a place for them, but I think it's more about ownership and empowerment at a local level to make sure that you are investing in the community and you have a community voice. But again, as we said earlier, it's with new media, it's changing. It's not necessarily about newsprint anymore. It's about applications that can be downloaded to your phone. You know, I mean, on a Sunday morning, if I want to, I can download the Sunday Times from London and look at all of their media reviews, and it takes me 5 minutes to download it, and it's a totally interactive service. I double-click on a photograph, and it becomes a video. I want to see a trailer for a new movie, and it's there. I double-click on it, you know. That interactivity that you can put into place with an application for the phone, you can put all sorts of community messages into that application, and if you're taking the ownership of the branding, it becomes part of the community, and it opens up for broader communication. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kim. I think the challenge is that for the past 17 years or so, we are told by the print media in terms of their steps that when you look in terms of ownership compared to your previous disadvantage, it's around 14% for the past 17 years. For women, it's around 4.4%. That's 17 years. Then the question is, do we have 50 years as a country to live up with the skewed environment which we are having currently? And if we can't, we need to change that. I think the question is then, what needs to be done? Because we have to do something. The as it stands now, it is very interesting that you still have five dominant, and linked to that in terms of what needs to be done. How do we ensure diversity as a country? as one of the MDDA mandates, how to ensure diversity. I hear that you were saying there is a space for the big one to play, which probably I would agree, but for 17 years, they don't seem to get it. That this country is divided in terms of views and so on. In fact, what happens is that they go down to community media and compete with those SMEs, community media, who try to bring that diversity, which seems to compromise the diversity of views. Because what it means, if that group nationally got a view, it can easily put it throughout until the community level, which means it limits all the diverse of views and so on. So I think, how do we deal with that? What is the reality which is confronting us? We don't want to see a march, people coming to parliament or wherever, marching for diversity in our lifetime. Because that's where we might lead to, where people say, you know, we need diversity in our lifetime, we need different of views. But how do we deal with that particular matter? What is confronting us? And for the engineers, we don't seem to have been dealt with.
Okay, if I can respond, thank you. We've spoken a lot about new media this morning, and I have to say that there probably aren't any experts in new media because it's moving so quickly. And what we've found is that there are things happening in our communities that we have no conception of. And I think part of what needs to be done is a communication needs to go out to the communities and say, you know, what are you doing at the moment? Because we've found, projects on cell phones. We've found people producing soaps on DVDs that are getting a reach of 300,000 and 600,000 in a community, and that these things are sold at taxi ranks. People have viewing screens in their garages on a Friday and Saturday night. There's a community centre around them, you know, 10 rounds and bring a beer sort of thing. I mean, there's just so much going on out there, but there is a cautionary tale around this in terms of community newspapers. I mean, if you use, for example, the Huffington Post, which I don't know if all of you are aware of, but it's the HuffPost that was established by a journalist from her living room, and she developed this website, which became incredibly successful and incredibly influential, and ended up, I think, being bought by either Google or Time. That there is a risk with community press that if they become successful or if they challenge the bigger newspapers may want swallow them up or take them over because they see an opportunity. And I think part of what needs to be put in place is a structure where this can't happen. If an organization is established as a community newspaper, that's what it needs to be. But do we want to stop people profiting from that? I don't know. I mean, that's a question that needs to be asked in the whole process. Is a community newspaper supposed to be a community newspaper forever? Or can it grow into something else, maybe develop into something else? The same with the website. It's not for me to answer that. That's for a debate with the NBDA and its funders, I think. But it's something that needs to be considered. In terms of the timeline, this is something you could probably turn around in 6 months. It's not something that's going to go for 10, 20, 30 years. It's something that could happen now if you identify the right people with the right sort of support and investment. So I'm not at all concerned at that, and there are plenty of examples out there of filmmakers also who've done the same thing. They've gone out and done their own thing and become extremely successful on a very limited budget. And if you look at what Gavin Hood did with Tootsie, and he's now stepped into a much bigger picture because he understood how to use limited resources and the talent that he found in South Africa to create a product that was as good as anything else in the world. And, I think we've just got the opportunities here to do something. There is a vast amount of untapped talent and untapped stories, and communication out there that we can use. It's passion, drive, and commitment that we're looking for. So I'm with you. It's something that could, in my view, happen very quickly. Not necessarily right across the country, but if you start with specific areas to target and see how it works in the short term, and then replicate that and get people in those communities to go to other communities to show how they've done it, you know, and then, you know, the trainer becomes the teacher sort of thing.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee, members. I think we've come to the end for this part. All the best. Wish you well. I hope you are a South African. There is no ambiguity around that, because if you are not, you are not qualified. But I would hope you are.
I'm not going to offer you to cut me in half to see, but it's true. Yes, I am. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you, everybody, for your time.
Thanks. Your candidate should make sure that they are enjoyable, so that he will stay with them for a long time. But it's 45 minutes per candidate. 45 minutes per candidate. Nothing will stop us to finish in 20 minutes. But maximum 45 minutes, but you can finish in 15 minutes or 10 minutes, and so on. And I'm told that the candidates from Joburg, they've been brought in with an earlier flight, so the likelihood most of them are in, so that we can be able to roll in terms of moving faster, because those who are flying only one or two, they will be delayed, but most of them they should be here by now. So 45 minutes maximum, but we can do better. Morning. How are you? Yes, you can.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yes, I just want to check. Are you Mr. Adam?
Adam Hawk, yes.
Okay. Are you here for MDDA interview?
That's it.
Okay, I need to check, because sometimes one day we interviewed a wrong person. He was going for a mineral regulator.
Oh,
we thought someone else, so sometimes it's good to check. I assume you are a South African citizen?
Yes.
Okay. You're most welcome. I'm Kumuzo El Koran, chairperson of the committee. There should be water in front of you. You must just check whether it's not opened. If it's opened, indicate so that we give you the closed one.
Sure.
So that you are able to cool down. These are members of parliament. They will introduce themselves as they ask you questions. We shortlisted 10, one we threw, you are 9 now. Why must be, it should be you one of the two, which we need out of the 9? Can you tell me? That's your first question.
Mm-hmm.
Why must you be one of the two which we need out of the 9?
Well, as a researcher at the University of Cape Town, looking at the role that media plays in making democracy a reality, you know, it's a key focus in our undergraduate and postgraduate teaching. A great deal of my research has looked at cultural expression through the media and attempts to insert a more diverse set of political voices into the public sphere. So essentially, I think serving on this board from a research perspective will personally be quite helpful. It'll give me a clearer sense of how the media operates outside of academic circles. I have been active as a journalist. I used to write for the Mail and Guardian. What used to be called Student Life magazine is now called SL, Y magazine. I've been a practitioner But that was about 10 years ago. I've been on the theory side of things, teaching students. And I think serving on this board would be helpful from a teaching and research perspective. But I also think a lot of the theoretical debate about how the media operates in a democracy, how development can best be served through getting a range, a broader range of people with media production skills. That is an important sort of area that I think I would be able to contribute as an academic.
Members, honorable to Father Berg.
Thank you, Professor. I just want to have a bite before I go. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Adam Hope. Yes. My name is Rosalia Mutka. I'm a member of this committee. You know, I just gone through your CV and your qualifications on film and media, and got masters in English. I just want to know, in terms of media diversity, your understanding about the local print media, newspapers, and also broadcasting stations. How would you contribute in terms of promoting the indigenous languages? Because I think at the moment we are not doing enough. That's one of the questions I want to ask you. My second question would be on the transformation of media and your understanding of the trends of ownership and control of media. I stay in the township, and what is happening in the township? We have all sorts of papers that have dropped in our post boxes. Those are supposed to be local media, and these the papers are full of advertisement, in fact. I want to understand whether it is what we need as a community in terms of the MDDA Act, because these papers are full of advertisements. The worst thing is that the newspapers, they are owned by some conglomerates, not the community that they are supposed to serve. The inclusion of the committee, in decision making, and also in printing of the newspapers. That also applies to our local broadcasting station. Can you maybe just give me an inclination of how you think it should be dealt with by MDDA?
I think that's exactly the challenge for the NDDA, isn't it?
Mr. Hub, you speak through me,
sure.
And not the two of you. If you speak the two of you, when you decide to manhandle each other, I will watch you.
You can respond. Absolutely. I think that is the challenge for the NDDA at the moment. Being in a situation that is quite contradicting. The Act is quite well intended, but I think the reality of what we're facing with, that reality has yet to change. We are in a situation where a very small number of holding companies dominate a large amount of market share. In the Western Cape, specifically, we've seen NASCAR and indicated newspapers circulating what they call community newspapers. But they're in fact not community newspapers. They're not owned by the community. The news agendas are not set by the community. Local community members are not skilled, are not educated in the production process of local news. So whether you are here in Khayelitsha or whether you're in Athlone or in John Bosch, you see the same newsroom producing largely the same kinds of stories for that community with tweaks here and there. And you're quite right. Advertising revenue is the key motive behind that. People in independent newspapers will tell you that the largest amount of revenue that they get is from advertising in those fee papers. And that's how they cross-subsidize the other news titles like the Cape Times and the Argus and so on and so on. So that is a big issue. What does the NDDA do about that? I think it has been doing quite a bit, and perhaps it has been under-reported. I think the work of the NDDA generally is not as visible as it could be. What it has been doing is it has been attempting to scale, to train people in aspects of production, aspects of the business, of running a sustainable organization. But I think the issue of media ownership in the South African context needs to be tackled more substantially than it has been. I think we need to look critically at competition in the South African context. Are we allowing corporations to get away with things that do not promote competition in the marketplace? That's one issue. The other issue is, are we allowing the commercial sector to infringe upon the non-commercial media sector? And the answer to, from my perspective is yes, we have. And maybe we can come up with statutory mechanisms to ensure that commercial media do not infringe upon the domain of non-commercial media. We need a very vibrant information commons, a vibrant public domain in which information is freely accessible. And that information does not automatically become commodified by commercial interests. Right. We need to ensure that that happens. So I think we need statutory mechanisms that ensure that we don't see that encroachment upon non-commercial media. Then, of course, support, financial support for that, something that the NDDA has already been doing. So I think one way of strengthening the arm of this agency is to push for legal mechanisms that prevent encroachment upon non-commercial media production. So you're already doing the training, but how do you protect that turf? And then at the same time, you ensure that those non-commercial media entities actually do have editorial freedom. Right now, you have the tough situation for many community media entities. They have to compete for advertising revenue like any other commercial media entity. And I think maybe there's your problem. There's too much of a reliance on the market to balance things out. But in actual fact, the market is skewed in favor of a minority of corporate players. And this is how we end up with that contradictory situation of having community newspapers that are in fact owned by independent newspapers, and it's not actually independent effort. It's a corporate entity, it's a conglomerate, it's a monopoly. So I think we do need to look critically at how we prevent monopolist tendencies in business generally, but specifically in media. So how do I contribute to the NDDA? How do I actually contribute to that? To come to the first question that was posed. The idea of my research right now, and certainly with my first book, and definitely with my second book, is looking at how that works in the media industry. How does that work? What are the consequences from a cultural perspective of an environment that is so dominated by corporate media monopolies? So a lot of what I look at is youth culture in marginal places, in township spaces, hip-hop artists, aspiring poets, etc., etc., hoping to use the media in all sorts of ways, but who are unable to do so because of these structural constraints. So a lot of my research has drawn attention to the structural as well as the quantitative issues around enabling or constraining a diversity of perspectives coming through the media. I hope that I've answered that question. We can come back to that if I haven't covered everything.
Thank you, Jefferson.
Your mic?
Language. Absolutely. I completely forgot I should be making notes. Afrikaans and English are the languages that predominate in most media. If you look at African language radar in the Eastern Cape, for example, the numbers, the statistics reveal that we have a very, very large listenership in indigenous language radio. But the advertising revenue doesn't match the reality of the numbers. I think advertisers are still making assumptions about people who speak indigenous languages not having the necessary disposable income. So they're not worth investing in. So is the argument. I think this is usually problematic. I think we need to be challenging industries to support diverse media. And one way of doing that, one way of overturning that is for the NDA to continue what it is already doing, is to look at whether it's print media or whether it's radio or hopefully television to support initiatives in indigenous languages. But I think, as I said before, a large part of it is that we have such a large monopoly in this sector, which pushes English and Afrikaans, English largely. If you actually sort of create space for a wider range of community entities to step into the equation, not just commercial entities, but non-commercial entities, then I hope that indigenous languages will actually flourish. You see the same thing as in the university sector. Many parents, my experience at UCT and UWC and Stellenbosch, where I have taught before, many parents make the decision to place their kids, their children in English language, English medium schools, because it will guarantee them access to the University of Cape Town, because it's an English language institution. And I think one way of undermining those assumptions is to actually make indigenous languages a prerequisite, to actually push students at university to study those languages, to push schools, Model C schools, affluent schools, to actually sort of encourage mother tongue education on one level. And from the media perspective, you complement that by actually promoting the production of media products in more than just English and Afrikaans. Yeah, I hope I'm speaking to the question adequately.
My apology, Honorable Minister. You've got the platform again.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good day, Dr. Hart. My name is Nikki van der Berg. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Communication. You are a wonderful, educated man. I just want to know, I think new media is very important if we look at the situation in South Africa reaching out to people. I just want to know how you think about using new media, especially to meet the objectives of the MDDA. And then I was just wondering, don't you think that the MDDA is not marketing itself enough? I've got an idea that people don't know about opportunities. And maybe if you became a board member of the MDDA, what will you do to promote the objectives of the MDDA? I think from Parliament's side, we must do more to promote the MDDA as its objective, so that the people know what is going on and what the opportunities are there for them. Thank you, Chairperson.
I think that's an excellent, excellent question. My sense is that the MDDA is one of the unsung heroes in the mechanics of democracy post-1994. It has a website, it has an online presence, but I think a great deal more can be done to engage a range of people. My own research has been to look at, specifically if you look at my CD, over the last 17 years, I've looked at hip-hop, and hip-hop as a genre of music is not just about writing lines and, you know, being co-opted into U.S. cultural imperialism. If you really look at what is happening locally with hip-hop, you'll discover that in places like Cape Town, people are writing, of course, in Afrikaans, other parts of the country, they're writing in Sotho and Tswana and Zulu, etc., etc. I think that's that. Absolutely. So it's one of the, as a genre of music and as a media form, it's not just an example of cultural imperialism, it's actually an example of indigenization, of localization. And what people are doing is, whatever their mother tongue is, they're actually expressing themselves through rhyme, through poetry. And really what they're doing is, if what oral poets, you know, oral performers in the actual context have always been doing, except that instead of using a physical drum, they might be using a drum machine, they might be using loops and beats. So the technology might have changed, but they're actually using the technology in ways that actually promote the own sort of personal perspective, their own personal expression, etc., etc. So for me, my interest in hip hop has actually revealed that we see two things happening. We see an affirmation of mother tongue expression, and we see an appropriation of technology that, say, jazz musicians or, you know, other people in media might not have thought of before. And what I've discovered is the first movers in the area of cultural production in South Africa through new media and mobile media have actually been hip hop artists. So if you want to go online and have a sense of what Spaza rappers like Demon's Cup are doing, you'll find that there's an online presence, there's an online trail. They're using new media and mobile media in ways that more conventional musicians and artists have not been using them. What is the fact of it with NDDA? Let me tell you, in a nutshell, we see the opportunity to engage a range of people already using technologies in outside of the operation of mass media. Mass media has been quite limiting. Mass media, in many respects, works with a very sort of strict one-to-many model. I'm the sole broadcaster of a message, and I broadcast this to a range of people. You've positioned as recipients of a message, etc., etc. What social media, what web2o tools would do is to sort of say everyone is a broadcaster, everyone is a producer of a message. You can distribute things that might have been either in a single gatekeeper like the SABC before. You can now do what they do in a very flat, decentralized kind of way. And South Africa, in contrast to the rest of Africa, is singular because its web access has been facilitated by smartphones a great deal more than other parts of Africa. So now we're seeing it in the South African context. People are using Mixit, are using Facebook, are using Twitter, YouTube, Vimeo, a range of other kinds of tools to promote the messages, to promote the art, etc., etc. For me, the challenge with the MEDA is to sort of look at what these people are already doing and think about how they can support what they are already doing. Because they've actually circumvented the limitations of mass media by using social media, and they're doing that through mobile phones largely. They're also doing it by accessing open source sound production software, and as well as tracked music software, because it's just too expensive. Cakewalk will cost you 10,000 rand, for example. Trojans will cost you no less than 10,000 rand. The only reason I can afford to buy this horse is because I have a generous research fund. But essentially, they're using a range of different kinds of tools, and I think that the challenge with the NDA is to actually sort of find these people. I think you can find a broader range of people than you're already accessing. Is to actually conduct research on web2o tools and people's use of it, and then actually thinking about how to facilitate their growth in that regard. So once you sort of venture into that terrain, you're going to find that your visibility with a whole brand new market and a whole new generation of people, your visibility is going to sort of, it's going to become more prominent. You're going to become more visible. So it's fine that you've been focused on mass media largely, but I think you're going to find that it's going to become a lot easier for you once you look at social media and how the mass media and social media actually complement each other and how you can establish a presence for yourself.
One interesting thing is that what I've noticed is that after each and every meeting of the committee, if we are engaging MDDA, 15 minutes or 30 minutes after the meeting, the decision of the committee meeting will be in Facebook, MDDA, their website, every time. That time follow it and notice it is there. They are even more active than Parliament itself to communicate with the public in terms of what Parliament is doing and so on.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My first question is being a form of a follow-up to the question asked by the Masori. I think in responding to that question, yes, you agree with all the issues, but what they've told us in responding to that question, it was you already know. What you wanted to hear from you is something new that will change the life of the poor, the disadvantaged out there. So I'll try to ask this in another form. Just yesterday when we met MDCA, and during our portfolio committee oversight, as a professor, there's an outcry of the survival of the community media, be it print, radio, and television, due to advertising. My question would be, what do you think needs to be done so as to promote this community media, so as to assist them to survive? Because currently what is happening, they cannot survive because the big giants of the industry are on top of them. Especially they are also owning the same space, in particular the print media, contrary to the MDD Act. So our interest is to hear from you, what do you think needs to be done? In particular regarding to advertising. We're even saying in that meeting that even as a parliament, when we do advertisements, we use the big newspapers, we don't use the local newspapers. So maybe you can also be interested in what needs to be done. Also regarding that, there's an idea of the establishment of the marketing procurement agency. The purpose of this agency, according to MDDA, is to facilitate access by small media to government communication contracts. What do you think about it? Will it assist the problem that we currently have? Secondly, Chairperson, or Mr. Hoop, what is your understanding of the key mandate of the MDDA and its funding model? Currently, is it working for us? Or do you think something must be changed there? Is MDDA still relevant in this point of time as it is? Thank you, Chairperson. No, that's just the last one. I see here in your CD, you are 40 years old. Yeah, you are very young, and life begins at 40. Now, that tells us, that if by any chance you got lucky, you become appointed, what new things do you think you'll bring to MDDA? Your skill, what skill will you bring to the smooth running of the MDDA that is making current? Thank you, Chair.
I thought you'll ask that day 40 is awful kind of things in second. And in terms of things bringing forth, but I thought you were going to that direction.
I wanted to ask that, but I saw Honorable Ketana just side looking at me, so let me go
back. Interject if I missed anything by the end of, because I've seen many things packed into that question. Perhaps I wasn't clear about, definitely so that your answer was short, straight to the point. Perhaps I was not clear about what I think needs to be done. I think the problem with media ownership and the mobilization of commercial as well as non-commercial media in this country is a big problem, as you quite rightly point out.
the solution that I'm pointing to is actually sort of intervening at the level of ownership itself. To come up with a statutory mechanism that prevents neo-monopolization. And to actually look at the competition aspect and actually think about whether the competition has actually, legislation of competition in this context, actually served its purpose. Given that the answer to that already seems to be no. That's one thing. The other thing is mechanisms that actually prevent the encroachment of commercial media on non-commercial media. Those mechanisms, if they're not working, and I don't think they are, they need to be looked at. I'm actually trying to remember the other part of the question. There are other contexts, like the context of India, where the issue of media monopolization, especially monopolization by foreign entities, foreign corporations, that has been dealt with. A key part of why Indian media and Indian cinema specifically have flourished because they've protected their own local entrepreneurs to prevent, you know, foreign entities from coming in and owning majority shares in corporations. I think there's a lot that we can do in that regard. There was a third question. So I think I hope the first two questions I hope that I've covered that well. I'll see if that is such.
There is a question that MDBA, when they presented before the committee yesterday, they've indicated that they're establishing sort of a central or system which would allow the community media to tap into government assets. What do you think about that?
That's an excellent idea. I mean, we all know that that's a very large revenue stream for commercial media players. So yeah, I can only applaud that initiative if that's where things are headed. Absolutely. There was a fourth question. The fourth question was about what I bring to the party in a sense. What I bring, obviously, look, I mean, I'm an academic. I have no direct interest in the way in which commercial and non-commercial media operate. My interest as an academic in the media is the way in which democracy functions. And essentially, I've looked to a great extent at the problem of youth cultural expression attempts at actually shaking up democracy through cultural production. That's one thing that I bring to the party. That's the knowledge of that sector. But another element that I bring when it comes to political economy is the media issue. It's the question of how intellectual property shapes what is possible in the media sector. Many people don't actually think that things like trademarks and copyright affect Section 16 of the Constitution. My argument in my research has been that there's a direct relationship. Intellectual property and these sort of strict approaches to intellectual property oftentimes serve corporate monopolies and actually limit free speech. So there's a great deal of research that I can bring into the equation that can sensitize corporate and non-corporate media entities around the issue of approaches to copyright law, approaches to more lateral ways of licensing media content, the story of open source software, the story of creative commons in this context. A great deal can be done to ensure that producers of media are able to use more flexible approaches to copyright law, both to serve, you know, the circulation of knowledge more freely, but then also to promote competition, to enable a range of players that are not able to access the doors of production, to enable them to actually enter the game. So there's quite a bit as far as that concern that I'd be happy to bring into such a position.
Thank you, Chairperson. Professor Hout, I see in your CV that you've done a lot of research about
I mean, about what is happening at a local level in the townships, especially among the youth, in areas of culture, expression, music, and so on, film, and so on. The MDDA is called upon to execute a very daunting task in the South African situation. We have, on the one hand, a very predominant formal media, the mainstream, the newspapers, etc. They are not only playing a role in publishing mainstream publications, but the new trend at the moment is that even the weekly publications that are distributed free of charge letter are deemed to be community newspapers, actually tend to displace the ones that the MDDA is trying to establish that are actually practically designed, conceived, and owned at community level. And you find that the dominant media is well funded and has a tendency of acting as a predator in eliminating the upcoming media. What would you think would be the role of the MDDA and your input in particular, playing as a team leader in the MDDA, in assisting the MDDA to realize its goals of diversifying the media and actually putting to an end this kind of predatory tendencies that tend to eliminate those who are trying very hard with very little resources to try and stand up on their own in order to be able to truly engage in what is self-expression, because these other so-called community newspapers negate that self-expression. They are imposed on the communities, even though the title might be say, but might be pretending to be localized. It is not actually localized. What would therefore be your input in assisting the MDDA to achieve that sort of thing? Secondly, the MDDA depends also in executing its task in bringing on board the established media players so that they contribute a portion of their profits in the development and uplifting of the upcoming newspaper. Do you have any views, be it newspapers, be it community radio stations, be it even of late community-based television stations? Have you got any views as to how the dominant player could be more amenable in assisting the upcoming media entities based in the community?
I'm seeing echoes of, you know, the same issue coming through with a number of the questions. So part of what you need to do is people are already said. I think the MDDA as a statutory body can, I think, push for changes in legislation that enable the operation of monopolies. Right? So one would be to look at competition. Our legislation on competition isn't effective. That's one thing. Then looking critically at media ownership and thinking creatively about how to limit the operation of monopolies, local and international monopolies, on this level. Now, any of the mainstream newspapers will say, well, the MDDA...
Maybe before you proceed, I think
we've been raising the issue of competition commission more often. But I'm sure you understand that the competition commission or the act itself, by its nature, reacts, does not prevent.
Yes.
By its nature, all the competition laws, most of them, they react. Only regulators, sector regulators, they have got the mandate to prevent. But print media, you are talking with an industry which is self-regulator. There is no regulator which will prevent things from happening. The case in point now for predatory pricing is after effect. It has already happened that newspaper is already closed down. It's only that now the Competition Commission is taking up the matter. Now, I think on your response, you must start to balance that. The issue of the competition laws itself, which seeks to say something must happen, and then they intervene. It's post, not anti, in terms of its nature and so on. So I think on your response, because I'm just raising it because you have been raising competition commission for many times, but just say in mind that it's reacting, not proactive.
So what we need is a proactive approach, a preventive approach.
I'm just raising up because from the question and your response, you go back to it to say, let's look at the competition law. But the issue I'm raising is that they react, they not present. So what it happens, it means these newspapers must close down first, or whatever must happen, then it's when the competition will come in and see whether those things happen. And the difficult thing is the self-regulatory environment. It print media, at least broadcasting is regulated, but print media is self-regulatory. So I'm just raising that so that when you respond, you are able to look into that. Seven, that's what, seven.
I think in addition to what you are saying, maybe to assist the problem, that is why when I was asking a question, I was saying, as a follow-up to what Nema's going to say, if you link the question asked by Honorable Zondi, and what was asked by Mastoli, and what I asked is the same question in fact, in different angles. That means that the gentleman there is not giving, I don't know what to say, drop or whatever, but he's not responding directly to the question. Maybe if we can request the gentleman just to be direct, and maybe have to assist you, try not to repeat how we have responded before. Because I'm telling you, one member again will ask you the same question in another form. Simply because you are not responding to the question.
You can respond? Look, I think there is a problem there with the way that legislation works. If it's not proactive, then we need to look at, I'm not saying we should look to the legislation as it exists now. I'm saying we need to sort of analyze it and say, well, what's wrong with it? What can we do to make it proactive, to prevent a particular kind of outcome? This is why I keep coming back to that issue. So I'm talking about advocating for a change in legislation to create an enabling environment for competition, for sustainable media. So this is why I keep coming back to that same issue. That was not clear. So that's what I'm saying. I'm saying take it apart if it's not working. Deconstitute it. Deformulate. You see the same thing, and this is where I come back to an area where I feel much more competent. You see the same thing with the Copyright Act at this moment. At the moment, DGI has done one good thing. It's actually asked for submissions on collection society, for example. And a range of players have actually made suggestions. At the same time, musicians represented by FAMLO have petitioned DTI again for to look critically at the Copyright Act. Another organization, an NGO called the African Commons Project, has done the same thing. It's looked at the Copyright Act critically and said we need to change it, and these are the things we need to do. Saying something along those lines needs to happen to solve this problem. We see civil society playing a role and actually attempting to speak to a government department. But we also see an acknowledgement of of a problem with the legislation as it exists. Now, the question around the Cartwright Act, I think, is the issues around the Cartwright Act is closer to my own competence. I think a part of the problem with the way the media operates is the way in which intellectual property law tends to privilege corporate monopolist interests. And I think a sort of more sort of critical appraisal of where copyright legislation stands is necessary, given that it's so old and it doesn't take into account of where digital media is right now, the way people are working with sound, with music differently. And this will be the moment to do it, because we see a transition of a particular sector of our society, younger people who work, who play with media, who make media, but who circumvent that media and go online and use mobile media. So that is where I'm most competent to make a contribution, to think about where people are with technology, where they are with media, how they're working with intellectual property, what can be done from the NDDA's perspective to make a contribution to those transitions to enable more diverse expression.
Okay. Stefan?
Yeah. So, my name is Danny Gagana. I'm a member of the committee. The gentleman is an academic, and he's also a researcher, which is a good thing. The advantage of that is that you can sit in your office or in the library and look at the whole world without riding a plane or anything. Just be stationary, but you see the whole world. I just want to know, through your research, have you found anything? You see, human beings in my belief are the same. They could differ to a lesser great extent, but fundamentally they're the same. Is there theory or is there practice, better practice anywhere in the world that you can use in South Africa and say, look, irrespective of all the big media, tabloids, commercial, mass media, in this particular field, one, there has been sustainability. Mass media has managed to sustain itself, and this is how it has done it, different from South Africa. And secondly, the mass media has achieved what it intended to achieve, which is to access the local people. I'm just saying, you know, unless we have something to show that has worked somewhere else, I would imagine we'll keep on debating, because this thing of competition, it will always be there. The big guys will always subsume or swallow the small one. So even in the ocean, the big fish swallow the small one. It's kind of there, but is this a creative way that we can use, and we have a model of that through your research? I think that is what will help us here through your position as an academic.
Thank you.
I think I spent about 10% of my working life in the office. A large amount of my time I spend either in the field doing research for teaching. So I think it's a bit of a misconception that academics are disconnected from the real world. They're very much in the world, making sense of things, getting their hands messy. Unless, of course, you're studying classic literature or Greek mythology, and perhaps you're in your office reading the classics. Media scholars don't have that luxury. Media is a moving target. I feel that I can't keep up the way things shift persistently. But there are some constants within that environment that makes it easy for one to talk about what needs to be done. And as I said before, my particular area is intellectual property.
But the question is through your research, have you, through research Is there anything better somewhere in the world? I want to start to go straight to the question. I don't want the preamble. Have you got any thing or system which is working? I think that's where the number is going, so that through your workers and second.
I want to make a follow-up before you answer, sir.
Okay.
Yes, you're right. Our question is not thinking of field work or field services. I saw those field work academically guided by theories, and theories are based on practicability. So I thought I didn't do that, we just stuck on preaching people like, or begin the life run, but I said, you have that advantage that you can also check out through research by reading books about how other people have done what we try to do. Our second referring to book reading theories that are there before you go into the field, because field work is always guided by theory.
Absolutely. I take the comment. I misunderstood your framing of your question. Look, in social democracy, we see mechanisms that ensure that diverse kinds of media actually flourish. Contexts like Norway, they're not perfect. Denmark, Sweden. So we see a mixed economy. It's not, you know, a socialist context in conventional sense of the word. It's a mixed economy that we're talking about. But the other mechanisms that ensure that public funding is not undermined by neoliberal objectives. What we've stuck with in the South African context is a neoliberal model, which has stayed too far from the mixed economy approach, I think. And I think there are attempts right now to steer it more towards the social democracy model. And I think that needs to be encouraged. I don't think that that will be a bad thing. So I think a large part of what we're looking at is that we're talking about the problems with the way intellectual property has been used to consolidate corporate interests, or the way in which competition works or doesn't work in this context. I think it comes down to our assumptions about what the economy should be. So I think a critical appraisal of macroeconomic policy is you know, that's the issue. So can I go on? Can I elaborate? Because it's quite a bit behind what I'm saying.
You can accept that you don't have time, but you can do it in a minute or two.
No, I was just going to say, well, if you'd like to get a sense of where I'm coming from on that issue, please see Chapter 1 of Stealing Empire, which is available. If you Google the title, it's available from the HSRC Press under an open content license for free. So there's a great deal about economic policy that shapes what is possible in commercial and non-commercial media. And that's a key problem for us right now.
Love it.
Thank you, Chef. I am Honorable Ndato, member of the committee. From your CV, you present you as a media academic. Now, from your CV, I learned that you are used to the big city. What I want to know is, how will you face the challenge of a place, for example, in Shanghai, where there is no media, no newspapers or what? How will you face that challenge, or how will you come about to that challenge? Thank you.
Can I respond? It's great. My research work is very particular. I position myself as a media and cultural studies scholar that looks at urban culture, anything that relates to urban culture, anything that relates to copyright law, that relates to the use of technology, new media, and so on and so on. So the sense that I bring is to exploration of how people are able to use technology innovatively, how they're able to express themselves through any means of culture. So contexts that don't have the necessary infrastructure to make the internet tech, for example, to run music production software or sound software, that is a big challenge. But even then, in that context, people make culture, they don't have nothing. People work with available technologies, people work with available cultural expressions, whether they're writing poetry, performing it, whether they're making music. That's always going to be interesting. So even in a context that has no electricity, people are making culture. What is culture? It's not an essential thing that gets made and remade by people. Much like language shifts and mutates, cultural expressions shift and mutate and gets made and remade. So for me as a researcher, if I can access a context like that, and I'm pretty sure I'll come up with something interesting.
Thank you very much. Enjoy your day better.
Thank you very much.
All the best. On the deliberation by the members in finalizing the two candidates.
Thanks so much for your time.
By the way, you say, where must we look, which website? You were referring on I will take on the website. Yes?
So, if you go to the HSRC Press website, it's www.hsrcpress.ac.za. You can find a free PDF of my book. I also forgot to say, within about a week's time, my own website called Static Flow will be launched, and it's geared towards supporting specifically hip-hop artists around the issue of access in the music industry. If you're interested, I certainly will make the details of that available. The first event, in conjunction with Cape Music Commission, the first event will happen on the 19th of November, and it should run for the rest of 2012.
Okay, thanks very much. We'll look forward. Thank you.
As well, also add to my understanding of how I think the MDDA objectives can be achieved.
Honorable Van der Weg.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Adendorf, my name is Nicky van der Berg, member of this committee. It's very encouraging to hear that you are active in communities. I think we need a lot of people on the MDDA board that have the practical knowledge how to implement certain aspects. I just want to hear from you. We are talking about people, the community need a voice, but can you, just in a short sentence or two, tell us, are we talking academically about something, or are there really a big need in communities, especially the rural communities, to be heard, to be voiced? That's the one part of my question. And the role of new media in this whole broadening of the MDDA objectives, can you just give us a crisp idea of your thinking on that? Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, I do not think that simply because when people are urbanized, that they obviously have access to a wider range of media products. When people are rural, in particular, they have a limited scope, or they have limited choices when it comes to media products. One, I think it is important to entrench particularly local democracy. The second point where I think it is important is because if you look at local councils, for instance, and I have never seen a local council, and throughout my travels, that has space for the public, probably double the size of the actual size of the council. What it means is, if you have 10 councillors, I've never seen that council having space within the public gallery for 20 people. There's always limited space. Because of the new dispensation where we have unicities or where we have larger municipalities, I think it makes even more sense to have local newspapers and the distribution of local ideas more regularly, because suddenly it is not easy. If I take the municipality where I am from, it's no longer that easy for my grandmother to just access municipal service directly at her local office. Now she needs to take a taxi that will cost her 22 rand to get to the head office of that particular municipality. So I think in that sense, because of the new dispensation we are in, it is more important that we need and that we must have local voices or a medium through which we communicate local content. I would also think that when we sit, and this is a problem that I've found, and this is a problem that I've discussed, where you have a particularly conglomeration of bigger newspapers, but let's look at the Western Cape, for instance, where you have Media 24 having covered probably all the communities of the Western Cape with particular newspapers. I've just looked at the ownership report by MDVA, where they say that Media 24 probably has more than 15, if not 20 newspapers within the Western Cape only. And I think that there is a need, understanding that, if you even take Independent Road and their entrenchment in communities in Cape Town particularly, there is a need for a diversity of news, because we have this thing in news where you share different ideas, where you share different views, where one editorial policy will stand, but what happens in Worcester is not necessarily what is required in Sirius while they share content. So I think it is important, especially also when you look at the conglomeration of news. The fourth point that I would like to highlight is the fact that when you look at mainstream newspapers, and let's talk about mainstream newspapers, because there the communities have a much better approach or a much better access to engagement content. When you look at newspapers, there is also the problem of the diversity that we spoke about. You don't get a flow of ideas as you would wish, but when you multiply, when you have more voices, it will only make just for better citizens at the end of the day. Talking about new media, I think that it is quite important that we use our Tusom centers better. Tusom centers not only to distribute national news or even provincial news, but I think that Tusom centers, wherever they are located, must also help in distributing local news. And there is one problem, though, and that is where I think that the NDDA needs to play a much bigger role in, is to ensure that we have news agencies in our own localities as well. But also, when you look at, you need to encourage, I know that one of the objectives of the NDDA is to look at cultivating a culture of reading, but I think we need to just promote the culture of reading much more so that you can ensure that it doesn't help you have access to media, but the media or the available media cannot be absorbed by community.
Honorable Michael, I've got a list. Do you want to make a follow-up on the list? All one? Oh, okay. No, I'll put you in there. Seven?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, Ms. Hazanov.
Good morning, ma'am.
Yeah. I hear you really have your response to the question of the Chairperson. You are this person with a strong rural background. FRB, you are a rural boy.
Yeah, a plug,
okay. I am a rural boy.
And equipment often comes a lot stuff that even the chairperson corrects me on that.
Yeah. But just three issues.
Yeah.
The first issue is in regards to the board membership.
Yeah.
Still you have CV, you are saying you don't have, you are not a member of any board.
Yeah.
But my experience is these people that we are appointing chairperson in the board. All of them, they say you don't have. But once we are inside there, is then all these things are resolved, that there's a conflict of interest once they are inside here. I just want you to confirm that really you are not a member of any board. So I just want that confirmation that so that it can be recorded.
Yes.
So if by any chance you get appointed, you come across this thing in future, you must come for that music.
Yes.
Number two, I just want to check these people who have nominated you, they have never done even initiative. Who are these people? What is the relationship with these people? So coming to the main task, of why you have applied for, why you think you have been shortlisted to be interviewed. Obviously, there are some things that we have checked through your CV, that made us to shortlist you.
Yeah.
And fortunately, Jefferson, the gentleman has managed, I think, to deal with the issue of media transformation and diversity that has been battling through it since this morning. In that regard, I just want to check, because you have also mentioned the issue of the establishment of the agency that can be able to facilitate the access by small media to government communication contracts. So that alone also shows that, I don't know, whether you have been in touch with MDDA, what is the relationship with MDDA? You are still responding to all these questions that members of the panel have been asking. You are responding to this like you are the person we are inside MDDA. What I'm trying to test is that, who are you in fact? What is your relationship with MDDA? Because we have all this information that you want. The last feature question is the issue of the funding model. What do you think of the current funding model of the MDDA? And I also see in your CV, you are saying you are the son of this soil, African National Congress, or you're waiting for the African National Congress. In this conference in Bulawayo, the ANC resolved that the funding for MDDA must be increased. What do you think? Do you think the current allocation to MDDA, is it enough for MDDA to do its work? If it's not enough, what do you think must happen? And you must couple that answer when you respond to the issue of the current funding model. And what is your understanding of the key mandate of the MDDA? Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. I think I'm still wondering what my thesis should be about, and I'll keep all these questions in mind as you post them. Board membership, I can solemnly declare that I am not a member of any other board. I ran a community I ran a community newspaper. I was involved in community and radio station on a part-time basis. I am no longer. I have ran a media consultancy. I am no longer practicing. I have made the decision to no longer take on any clients or to assist, and that is what I can confirm today on that. The Better Bonneville Initiative is a very exciting project where the community came together out of their own to say, how are we going to ensure greater access or greater interrogation or interaction with high-level issues that concern them directly? To say, how is it that the community is going to help cleaning streets? How will the community help, for instance, ensuring better education? How is it that the community will ensure the development of sport? I'm one of the founders of the organization. We have had interactions with other communities in the municipality, and it was during some of these interactions where other communities, the idea originated from other communities, that I should avail myself for nomination. And it was discussed, I laughed it off, and At the end, they made the nomination, and I accepted it. Relationship with MDDA, I can also solemnly declare that I do not have any relationship with the MDDA. I might have one if this committee agrees to establish a relationship between me and the MDDA man. When I was studying towards my journalism degree in 2000, from 2000, the matter of the MDDA was widely discussed at university. We took part in discussions with other universities at that point. We were asked to do some research on the matter, and it is an important matter, a matter that I feel very strongly about, and that is, I've just followed the development of the MDDA ever since then. I can, one can rightfully then claim that my professional career developed at the same time as the MDDA started. And that is why, on that third point of yours, it would be the greatest of honor if you would recommend me to the president to serve on the MDDA board. I think I have useful insight. I think I have a relationship with them from my career's inception. So I think that would I also attribute as a strength. The funding model for the MDDA. That has been a matter of great discussion. And when you look, let me get stuck at this point for a while. Section 21 of the Act says that the board may enter into agreements with any organization in terms of which financial or non-financial assistance is given to the agency for the furtherance of the objectives of the Act. In my view, and this is my honest view at the risk of being controversial, I think that that section, while I have respect for it, let me not stop there. What the MDDA has done, in my view, and or it is approaching toward, is to establish what I would consider an apartheid in media in South Africa. I'd explain that. Where you get community media, that is basically the primary role of the MDDA, that's left to rural people, most of the time black people, poor people, and that is most of the time then in languages that are not mainstream languages, like English and Afrikaans. And while the established media is reserved for a higher class of reader, I would like to see a situation, and I think it is imperative, that just like the MDDA Act says in the objective, that the MDDA is established to provide for the support of projects aimed at promoting media development and diversity, and to provide, oh no, that's not the point. The preamble says, it is to promote media development and diversity by providing support primarily to community and small commercial media projects. What are we then saying about ownership of established media? Are we then saying that the poor and black, the larger black community will never be able to penetrate mainstream media, not only successfully, but also sensibly? Are we then leaving community and small media projects only to people that are rural? That's the idea, or that's the objective of the Act, mostly rural and mostly, in other cases, poor. The second point is we must also understand the racial dynamics of most rural towns. While we want to empower communities to have newspapers, to have media products, we must also understand that one large component of the income of any newspaper is advertising. So while we want to empower communities by giving them rights to newspaper or right to media, even community radio as well, that community that you would like to write for is not in control of business in most instances. business is still located elsewhere, meaning advertising is located elsewhere. So, and I think that is why most of our newspapers are going through such stress. That is why the MDDA recently had to bail out Bush Radio, because it's going through some stress. Because while they speak to a particular audience, the people who are supposed, or the sector that's supposed to make sure that a newspaper agency or a newspaper project becomes sustainable, are not necessary from that community. And you'll see that, especially in rural areas, and this is what I've experienced as well. So that is why I'm saying that. Indeed, we need to look at the funding model of the MDDA. We need to, if we are serious about a meaningful, or of ensuring meaningful ownership of previously disadvantaged communities in mainstream media, we perhaps should also reconsider Section 21 that says that they cannot go against a particular funder. What, for instance, let's take the Western Cape, for example, and then I am African. I'm African, but I'm not here to represent people who are African. I'm proudly African, but I'm not here to represent people who are African. And I don't think that is the reason why I was nominated. Let's take the Western Cape, for instance, where the majority of people in the Western Cape speak Afrikaans. There's no radio station that is exclusively Afrikaans. Thank God we have Mhlobo Wenene in the Eastern Cape, provided for by the SABC. But how will we ensure then that marginalized, I mean, when you look at the radio landscape of the Western Cape, you can sensibly argue that Afrikaans, when you look at the radio landscape, Afrikaans is also marginalized language in the Western Cape instance. And that is why I'm saying that it is perhaps the case in other provinces as well, but thanks to the SABC that help us with particular radio stations in Free State to encourage the use of the vernacular in that particular area, in Mhlobo Wenene, in the Eastern Cape and in the Western Cape and part of the Northern Cape as well, and up north where the SABC is responsible for the promotion of languages in a particular language within that locality. So I will then say, I think that the Section 21 should most probably be revisited so that we can move beyond also, not entirely, but so that we can also move beyond the primarily as provided for in the preamble of the Act. I think that it is also important.
So in short, you are saying the current provision does not allow MDDA to do what it's supposed to.
No, I am not saying that.
Okay.
What I am saying is that it addresses, that is why I started off talking about community radio stations. We should not allow a situation where we say community and small commercial projects are left to blacks, rural people. It's for the poor, while we leave mainstream newspapers and radio stations for the well-established, for the rich, that are unfortunately still very dominated by one particular race. That is what I'm saying. Second, in support of that, I'm saying that it is perhaps the case, because we have Section 21 that says that because these guys fund the MDDA, we cannot go against, or we cannot enter into a relationship that would go against that particular agreement with our funders. So that is what I'm saying. Because as I cited, for instance, the African incident in the Western Cape, where I, you know, if, say, for instance, what will happen if our people who are African in the Western Cape say, we would like to have a commercial radio station, what are we going to say? Where are we going to help? How are we going to help? Because the Afrikaans radio landscape in the Western Cape, or there is limited scope for Afrikaans when you look at the radio landscape of the Western Cape in this particular instance. And that is why I'm saying that we need to most probably not make payments by industry to the MDDA voluntarily, but perhaps do what the Communication Act did, but stipulate a particular percentage of their income so that MDDA can be funded more securely and better.
Let me take on. I still have two other points that you can do that quick. Okay. ANC Polokwane said that MDDA must the funding to MDDA must improve. I agree with that, and I've already cited why and how. One of the ways that I think it can be done. I also think, ma'am, that it is unfortunately unfair in my view, that you have, say, for instance, the Sterkvrijheid or Equal for New, and then you have the funding coming from national, but and I still want someone to convince me that local newspapers cover a marginal percentage of national news. I've never seen a local newspaper that covers a very big percentage of national news. I don't think it exceeds probably 5 or 10%. But that newspaper, whether it's in a cop or whether it's in a mob or wherever it is, it covers mostly local news. Why is it then that only the national government provides for MDDA? I think also that, one, we need to make sure that provinces are also contributing, because when news becomes local, it is also imperative that you also need to make sure that the locality supports that newspaper. I would see municipalities also putting aside some funding for local initiatives. And when we talk about the government who recently made a commitment to buy local and to support local, I would like to see a situation where government also commits itself to advertise in local newspapers openly and clearly. Then understanding of the key mandate of the MDDA, I think I have addressed that adequately, and if there's any follow-up questions, check with them.
So you just need to further clarify a few issues. Look, the main argument that you're making about the inequality that exists, that is acceptable, because that is why all of us are grappling with the issue of how to level up the playing field. Now, we know that rural areas, that you might be to remember that rural areas is a big problem, not just in terms of communication, in terms of all other aspects like job creation, like business, like infrastructure, because things are concentrated in the urban area. And, we also know that, we do get very good skills from the rural areas, and it's better when people from the rural areas themselves who experience life on a daily basis, what it is in the rural areas, do things. The blood deficit doesn't work yet, I think. In English, they call it the farm pumpkin. The blood deficit is the farm pumpkin. The urban people have always called the rural people all kinds of names, typical of human beings. To undermine each other and so on and so forth. But as you are aware, there's now a big effort to develop the rural areas. Now, when we're talking about the media, I want to firstly clarify the issue of media agency. Because you see, the way we understand the media is the mainstream, the media houses, they under them, you've got different newspapers. Of print media like Sunstar and so on. Now, if you creating another and the mass media, we were hoping that MDDA will cover it. Now, if you're going to create another media agency, are you not removing the media far away from people by establishing extra institutions? What is it that the media agency can do that MDDA can do? You know, at times when we can't solve the problem, we want to form an extra organization instead of addressing the problem itself. So, you know, that's an example. The brokers, when we did our oversight talk, mass media was complaining in the rural areas that this broadcast, they would invite advertisement to generate income for sustainability, but the problem with them is they want to take up to some take up to 80%, which actually kills the whole purpose of advertisement, because I would imagine they should take 20 and 80 should go to the mass media, because the intention of generating that income is to finance mass media so that it can be sustainable. So that explains why you think extra institutions like media agency can help. The second point, when you say local media doesn't report nationally, so which is something, is it not because they know that already reports, like for example, you see in Western States, there's no Africans. When I open up my FM radio here in Western States, a lot of stations are African. Just like if I do it in Johannesburg, a lot of stations, Kaya, Voice of Johannesburg, many other radio stations would be English. But I thought it would be covered by this many FM radios that speak in Afrikaans rather than your mainstream, like AKFM, Metro, which some of them can access here. So I don't understand why you say Western Cape. You pass me the rural area of the last point. What is the assessment? I mean, let's get to the root cause. What is your assessment of mass media in South Africa? With all the efforts that our new democracy have taken, do you think they are successful? If they are not successful, why do you think they are not successful, and what can you do about it? That is what we're looking for today. Somebody can say, I think we have failed here and there, and this is what I think I can do in order to improve the situation. Otherwise, you see, we end up getting a situation where you tell me the same thing that has been told before, the same thing that we're grappling with, the problem in other ways that we know, that we want to know how to address that problem.
Thanks, Jefferson. I think that the NDA is probably one of the most inspirational projects that came out of the democracy. When it is concerning the media, I do not think that they should get any competition. I simply think that they should be strengthened, and that they should perhaps look at widening the scope, but carefully, without infringing on any law, and particularly the MDDA Act. I do not think that there is a need for competition. I just think that we need to apply it better. Secondly, when I spoke about local newspapers and internet or national news, news is news because it is relevant, it is happening immediately, and because it concerns people directly. That is what makes it news. So that is why I'm saying that if, for instance, you have the Bushbuck Ridge Express, the Bushbuck Ridge, the audience of that newspaper would primarily be the people of Bushbuck Ridge. Perhaps the secondary audience would be passers-by, tourists who come once a year, or people who are just driving through the town, etc. So it's not common that they would address news that happens, say, for instance, in Luandle Strand, unless it is a fire that burned down a few shacks, and there's some advice on how to avoid these fires, because in Bushbuck Ridge there are too many shack dwellings, or how a story that happens elsewhere can assist the development of your community, of your readers. So that is why I said that when you look at a community newspaper, it's very rare that they will have even 10 to 20% of their coverage, of their entire coverage, based on national news, what happens nationally. I would even suggest that MBDA should look at perhaps encouraging newspapers to also look at covering more news in the province and news nationally. Because at the end of the day, the point is that MDDA gets its funding from national and then from a part or national players in the media industry. So that is why when I raised that point, I said that I think provinces and district municipalities and even local municipalities also have a responsibility of helping and supporting MDDA projects because they're working within their locality. The issue of Afrikaans radio station, you're right, sir. There are many Afrikaans radio stations in other provinces, in other parts of the country, national radio stations. But if you look at the Western Cape, where I am from, you have only, from what I know, and someone needs to correct me if I'm wrong, you only have KFM that has in Afrikaans and English. You have Kudu FM that has very limited Afrikaans. And then you have a national radio station, and that's Eritrea. What I'm saying is, I use the Western Cape as an example to say that in the Western Cape, there is no regional news, there's no regional radio station that offers the majority of the readers of the listening population here an exclusive Afrikaans choice. And I was just basically using that as an example of how do you then identify marginalized, because in my view, even Afrikaans when it comes to radio in that segment would be marginalized and should be treated differently. That is why I said that. My assessment of the media, we have made great advances when it comes to the development of journalism as a profession. We have made great advances in turning people who would otherwise not have been who would not have ended up as journalists into journalists, or we have enticed many others to the media industry that would have otherwise ended up elsewhere. That is a good sign. The second fact that I think that advancement of the mass media is the fact that we have had limited ownership of particularly mainstream media. But it is still, if you look at any of the others, if you look at Abusa, if you look at Media 24 or NASPEV, if you look at all the others, HCI ownership is still below 40% on average, and that is a concern. Where I think that the advances made when it comes to ownership has been limited. We must also understand, and this is a common fact and a problem to me as well, where we have the media industry totally exempted from triple BEE, for instance. You know, other industries have charters, for instance, on triple BEE or black ownership, while the media industry does not even have that charter, or unless someone else can tell me something totally different. So I think that the quality of news have improved. I'm more worried about some of the advances on particularly black, African, and colored, and Indian communities, for instance, because there's also a problem that I would call the tabloidization of news, where when it's about black people, and then we reserve them for Daily Sun. We'll keep it out of city. We'll keep it out of the Star. We'll push it to other newspapers, the tabloid. And that is a concern to me. And I'm not saying this as a problem necessarily, but just as something that we need to look at. When we talk about racism in the media, that is also a particular problem that we need to guard against.
Yeah, Chair. Allow me just to comment on the statement that Mr. Ardendorf just made. Mr. Ardendorf, I don't know what newspapers you're reading, but if you'd read The Citizen, The Pretoria News, The Sun, or The VLT yesterday, the front page was solely black politicians and black leaders of opposition. So believe you me when I tell you that black people are taken very seriously in the media, as they should be. And don't worry, they are not only sidelined to the Sun. Chairperson, I see here from Mr. Ardendorf's CV that he's aged 33. That makes him 1 year younger than me. That means in 2000 you were 21 years old. So chairperson, in a working life, you would expect someone who's been working on average for about 12 years to have kept certain jobs for a certain time. Chair, I see a mass amount of jobs that have been gone through here and for short periods of time. You were at the National Commission Ministry when you were 22 years old in 2001. The National Communications Ministry. Can you tell us what you did there and how long you stayed there? I then see that you were at the African National Congress in 2008. Can you also tell us what job you held there? Chairperson, and then there was another thing. Oh yeah, here we go. The Ministry for Economic Affairs, Tourism and Environmental Conservation, 2006 to 2008. Then after you were at the Presidency for 2003 to 2004. And not to mention the National Ministry of Women, Children and People with Disabilities, again, only for a very short period of time. In fact, the longest period of time you stayed with any organization is 2 years, according to your CV. Now, how do we know exactly when you're going to be bored with the NDDA and cause this committee to come and sit here again and advertise for, because let me tell you, this has become a joke with us, how many times we have to advertise, because the NDDA is not what you thought it was going to be.
Ma'am, thank you for that question. Thanks for the comment as well. When I'm sitting here, I can claim today that, and proudly so, that I can write for the media, I can write in the media, I can take very good pictures. I can do layout and design of newspapers, of magazines, of leaflets. I can...
Mr. Anuno, the question is, you don't seem to be staying in one job for too long.
Yeah.
Then there was specific area.
Yeah.
What were you doing in National Communication Ministry? What were you doing in the National Ministry of Women, Children, Persons with Disability? What were you doing in the African National Congress? What were you doing in the Ministry of... Can you answer the question?
No.
We are not answering the question. Can you zoom on the question? What were you doing? What work were you doing in the Ministry for National Communication, Presidency, African National Congress, and so on? But I don't need preamble. I think those are simple and straightforward questions that you can come me to add.
Chairperson, the only point that I was making is that you're right that I was young when I was in fact older when I studied. And the point that I'm trying to make, Chairperson, was to say that I had set a goal for myself at that point, because I was older than my peers at that point, that I would want to explore all avenues of the media. And that is why I have traveled the country, I've seen most of the provinces, and I've done lots of courses, and I have acquired lots of skills through moving. I've set a goal for myself that by the time I am 30, that I will, even if it means that I need to move from ETV to wherever to learn something new, I would have wanted to be at this age where I am, knowing every facet of the media. I was a student intern in the Department of Communication, where I assisted the MLO to the minister, at that point, Minister Abimate Ekasapuri. I worked for the ANC in the Western Cape Legislature as the media liaison and also researcher. I worked for the other one that you asked for, in the presidency. I was on the top team that arranged the 10-year anniversary celebration of the country, and that was just a temporary job. And you would even notice that it was from, I think it was November or something, to somewhere before February. I, at that point also, I must add, I was offered many jobs even while studying. And at some point, I had my head of department begging me to come back and complete my studies, which I then eventually did. I'm not sorry for the decisions I made then, because I think that I'm a much better media communication official as I now than I was then.
Okay.
Do we know that you are going to stay the full term in MCBA? That was another thing.
Because promoting diversity and the development of the media has always been a passion of mine. And I think that an opportunity like this would afford me to live that passion. Secondly, it's a board meeting, or it's the board. It is not, from what I understand, a full-time job where you need to go into the office from 9 to 5. I do not foresee why I would leave something that would allow me the flexibility of time to live out that particular passion of mine.
Thank you very much, Mr. Anand, for your time. All the best. Now I won't take any questions. We're running out of time. We're far away out of time. No other questions. We are done with this interview. We can break for tea for 15 minutes, for 10 minutes, and come back and continue another time. You are most welcome. I was taking the water in front of you. I can see it in order. Just relax. I'm Pumbulo Eric Colon, chairperson of the committee. Members will introduce themselves when they ask the questions, because they are all going to ask the questions. So they'll be introducing themselves. When you speak, there's a button on the mic. The one which is for the person, you just press it. After we've spoken, then you have spoken, then you switch it off again. As members will be asking questions. Yesterday, when I was trying to pronounce your surname, I was corrected many times. I hope when I say Kwadi, is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. Now you are welcome, Prof. Kwadi. We just zoom to the business of the day. I hope you are here for the MTDA interview.
That's correct.
Okay. And I took for granted that you are a South African citizen.
Yes,
Okay. No, thanks very much. We've shortlisted 9 of you for 2. Board members, if we need. Why do you think we should take you as one of the 2? What is it that you have which should make this committee recommend you to be appointed?
Well, I want to believe that there should be reflections in my CV of the kind of work I've done the greater part of my life, having been a professor for African languages, and also after that having joined the public service as head of education in the Free State, and then later on having been assigned with responsibility to be involved in policy making processes like sanitation policy by the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry, and also assigned with our duty to do ring fencing of electricity during the time when government was still planning to have the rest. And later on then, after that, being involved very much in training, I at the present moment mainly involved in training. Besides that, I think above all, it would appear to me that the poorest of the poor, the most rural, need to be represented in such boards. Because if one is the MDD, one of the MDD's objectives in fact, to address the question of redress, which is one of the areas that I'm sure that I would make my inputs, being a man who still lives in the rural area. Even though I'm a consultant, I'm moved away from the rural areas only when I'm going to do work as a consultant. I have reasonable grounds to believe that I can speak for the rural people. And that, those are the issues. Besides that, of course, my theoretical background is very strong with regard to language itself, the mind behind the vehicle. I think those are the few reasons why I feel that I would make my input. I, in fact, have also skills in project management itself. I've done 5 years working and advising on project management for municipalities. So those are the issues that I would present as issues I can stand and claim that I do have reasonable knowledge. Thank you.
Thank you. Member? Kekane? Seven?
Seb, you emphasized this thing that you are a specialist in languages, which is true. And I think you, when you say languages, you shouldn't teach difficult languages. And do you think the issue of communication and media is common in all indigenous languages in South Africa, especially in the rural area? Therefore, you could use their expertise there to help with the issue of languages. The second point, South Africa is not the world. South Africa in particular has a system of problems in the rural areas, in disadvantaged areas, about poverty, about jobs. The youth, I know, as a person who trains, I imagine most of the people who train that youth share like saying 70% of our population in South Africa is young, even in Africa. So it looks like the center stage of development, training, preparing for the future is going to be with that youth. Now the question is, do you think we could use media? I mean, media is there for the masses. So how can we use, in your opinion, media to talk about the dire need, which is a job creation, if you like, or addressing the issue of poverty? Do you think media can help us if we take it to the people as a vehicle to facilitate or be a catalyst towards addressing this problem?
Thank you, honorable member.
Amy, this comes from the Bible. The guy who was in the fire, the right prayer was one of them. Daniel, in the fire, the Old Testament. So he changed it to Danny, D-H of the N-Y.
Thank you, honorable member, Kana. The issue about media in rural areas, I would like to suggest that the situation in the rural areas is so dire, is so much in need of media, that if we talk in development, that is the area where there should be attention given. In other words, if MDDA has to reach its ultimate outcome in terms of giving services to the disadvantaged, over the years disadvantaged people, introducing media in the form of your community radios, in the form of people in the rural areas being organized in the form of cooperatives and them being responsible for a print media like a newspaper, I want to believe that it would be one of the most tremendous contributions that MDDA would have done. And that is really then my contribution with regard to that would be, I would be in a position to provide whoever to provide the team that would be responsible to establish those kinds of endeavors in the rural areas with what would be necessary in terms of the infrastructure that would be necessary for those things to be realized. That is why I talked about my life and my present involvement in activities in the rural area. With regard to the question of job creation, the youth, which you also referred to, I think it is obvious from what I've already alluded to with regard to establishing a cooperative that would in the end own, not necessarily depend on an outsider, own print media in the rural areas, as well as the promotion, own the newspapers or whatever print media that they may think of, that those kinds of endeavors would enable people to get jobs. And in most cases, those are the people that you have referred to, namely the 70%, the youth that you referred to. I think I must rest my case just on that, that there is no doubt that there is need, and that once done, then jobs will be there.
Honourable sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Mr. Kwazi. As you have mentioned, also it's in your CV that you are a professor, and you're also specializing in indigenous languages. I'm tempted to ask you this question. What role do you think NDDA must play to make sure that those people have been referring to from the rural areas, their languages are heard, and the media is taking that into consideration in whatever media is there, be it print or audio? Number two, I think you are familiar with the key mandate of the NDDA. What is your understanding of that key mandate in regards to the realization of these indigenous languages in South Africa? Secondly, Chairperson, is on the issue of the funding model. The current funding model, what do you think about it? Is it still relevant? If there are any changes, maybe you can share those changes with us, that we feel there might be changes. Somebody mentioned the issue of Section 21 of the MDDA Act. Do you also see Section 21 of the MDDA Act as a barrier, some sort of? Or let me just say, do you think that section must be revisited? If yes, why? What do you think of that act? Thank you, Chairperson.
And respond?
Thank you, Honourable Member, and indeed, good morning. I want to believe, Chairperson, first of all, that you would allow me to take out the act, because I may not be in a position to remember the different sections of the act. And before I could respond meaningfully, I would want to read that specific, just to check quickly. I know them. So I thought I should ask you before I can actually use it, unless I'm expected to remember the different sections.
You can read the fact that you've got almost four questions, only one of the four or five questions needs the act.
Yes, that's correct. No, no, I won't even spend more than a second to get to the section. I was just preparing to do that. The Honourable Member mentioned the question of my experience in language, indigenous language, and the role of MDDA. And then also mentioned that, asked whether I am aware of the key mandate of the MDDA. And indeed, the key mandate also, and then again asked about the funding model. I would like to start with the last one, namely the funding model, because the two first questions, I would want to respond to them more at the same time, because they are quite related. The funding model, I suppose, I may not stand here and claim I know exactly. All that I know is that an MDDA is an agency within the GCIS, which is a government institution, and that therefore the legislative environment for whatever needs to be funded there must be based on the PFMA.
Prof. Wally, I think you should not continue with the question of funding money. If you say you don't know what is currently is, there's no point of continuing. Because whatever you'll be saying will not be responding to the question. Because the question is trying to say, what do you think about the current funding model?
No, I don't know.
If you don't know, proceed to the others. You don't have to explain anything at all.
Oh, so I know. Okay, thank you. No, I really don't know, ma'am. I don't know it. The last question then, the last two questions, ma'am, with due respect, I would like to say that the key mandate, as I mentioned even earlier on, is the empowerment of the disadvantaged, insofar as the media. The media issue. That is one of the major mandates of the MDDA. And that, therefore, as part of that empowerment process, it would also be quite relevant for the MDDA to ensure that language, the indigenous languages themselves, are empowered. It would be in the interest of the MDDA to find mushrooming of media in the languages that are spoken by the majority of the people. That would be one of the most important achievements of the MDDA. Media in the form of course, the community radios that are based on the languages, as well as the print media that are in those languages.
When is that so? You say there are two questions you should answer later to get. Is this the one?
There is the question of section 21. The one which make you to take out the act, which you say you wanted to look into it before you respond.
I'm just quickly going to check section 21 of the act. The agreement.
I think if I might disagree in there, because that question was also related to the funding model. So if Mr. Jokwazi was informed in regard to the funding model, I don't think it would be necessary for him to respond to Section 21, because they were interrelated.
Oh, okay. And other question remaining, Prof?
I think if I'm not responding to that, that was the only thing I left out in the question.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Honorable Michael?
Thank you, Prof. Prof, I just want to ask you about your history at Vista and your directorships there, etc. When you left those institutions, university institutions, was there any controversy surrounding the time that you left?
I'm not aware of a single controversy around me, I suppose that's what you mean. When I left Vista University, I had just been elected. I had just been elected by both staff and students in the transformation forum that had to be put in place because the university had to undergo transformation. And I was elected. I did not apply, and I guess that the fact that I was elected was an indication of how much the impression which everybody in the institution felt about me.
Okay.
So there was nothing regarding any textbooks or anything of the like when you left the university? Because at that time there was a controversy regarding an amount of textbooks that had gone missing and then were resold to the university. So you were in no way involved in that?
Ma'am, the university situation is such that no such controversy could be there at university because students buy textbooks themselves.
Okay. Ekan?
Thank you, Chair, for giving me another chance. Professor, you can realize that MDDA, if anybody is appointed in the board, is going to be having pretty better challenges, so there's going to be a lot of work there. And you as a professor, professors also are by their nature, I would imagine, overloaded also. Do you think if you lucky, and you're suitable and you're appointed, you still find time to serve MDDA in your professorship. Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Member, I have indicated that at the present moment, most of my work, at least for this year, I'm doing training of public servant managers in monitoring and evaluation. Most of my work I spend doing that. That otherwise, teaching at university, I left when I was still attached to university, to Vista University. And the only other thing that is still remaining for me is doing my own personal research. Research is part of my life, I guess, until death. And that is the personal involvement. I once believed that being involved in the work of the board of the MDDA would only enhance my life, in the sense that then I would have other things to do, to carry on as a retired person.
Thank you. Prof, the issue of diversity, which is part of MDDA mandate. How do you think MDDA should go about executing that mandate to make sure that we've got media diversity in the country?
To the way to respond, the way I would like to respond to it is to say diversity in terms of culture, diversity in terms of languages, diversity even in terms of geographical areas. We'll be talking urban versus rural. The mandate is very clear, ensure that all the areas are covered by the media, and that ensure that all languages are covered by the media, ensure that there is representation also of the different cultural groupings in terms of the media areas where the whole cutting across the whole spectrum of the country. That is the mandate. That is how I understand it. So I think that I understand it in that way. That you mean the languages, Zulu, Xhosa, you name all of them, African for that matter. Everyone of the languages, the areas, rural, urban, all of them, media. This is how I would understand the question of diversity.
The Act, MDDA Act, is what passed to double what became a law 2002. Why in 2011 now? We're still talking about diversity, issue of diversity. Well, my question is how to go about that. How to go about that? What you are saying is fine. Language, culture, geographical is fine, but we've got 9 years with the Act saying that that is what we must do. It has not happened. The question, how do we do that within the mandate of everything of this?
I think what would be necessary would be for one to have a feasibility study that seeks to establish neglected areas where there is complete neglect, and you compare all of them
and then I'll actually establish a baseline, and then ultimately come up with proposal, have a project that would ensure that the question of diversity is addressed. That is what I would recommend.
Members, thanks very much for your time. We were coming to the end of the class. All the best, safe journey back home. The committee, after finalizing the interviews and its delivery, to come up with the two names which is needed to be recommended. Thanks very much for your time. Am I ready with the pronunciation of your surname?
Nonani.
Is that right one? Nonani. Nonani. Oh, Nonani. Let's see how do you fly the interview. This is bad. Let's see here. How do you fly? You are most welcome. Relax. Is that water half empty or half full? Okay, you must get the full one. If that one is powerful. Relax. I'm Kumbuzo Eric Colon, chairperson of the committee. Other members, they will introduce themselves when they ask you questions, just to save time. Are you in a right interview for MBA? Oh, okay, we have just to establish. And you are a South African? Okay, no, that's good. We just go straight to the question. I'm sure you had time to relax outside, and now you are fine. We have shortlisted 9 people. Why do you think you must be part of the two which we must recommend for appointment, especially you? Just press the button with the mouse, and then after you finish, you press it again to be off. Okay, you can respond.
Oh, thank you very much, Chairperson. In answering your question, my name is Penny Longman. I have been nominated to be a non-executive director as part of the MPDA. I think that I should be one of those non-executive directors, mainly because I've got experience in community media. I got involved in community media as early as the late 80s in Grahamstown, when I participated in reviving the then oldest community newspaper called Grahamstown Voice, which was actually established by people like Guy Becker in the late 70s. I also moved from there. I went to Rhodes University to study journalism. So I am a journalist. And I continued to study also. I did an MPhil degree with the University of Port Elizabeth, which is now known as the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University. As part of my research paper, I focused on how South African media reports international events, issues. So I am a person who's interested in how the South African media plays a role in this society, and I think I'll be able to make a contribution for to be part of the MDDA board, because I understand the challenge that is faced by a number of people who are trying to initiate community media organizations like community radio stations and community newspapers. And because of that understanding, I think I'll be able to make a meaningful contribution. But again, I think I'm a skilled person. I'm skilled in the area of management. I'm skilled in the area of other basic education and training. I train people in media management and other areas. Currently, I am involved in, I'm more of a consultant, providing a service to a number of organizations in the area of media management, marketing, and communication. So I think that's why I think I should be one of those people. That's a long answer, Chairperson.
And you seem to be communicating too much.
I don't want us to ask two questions. Honorable Michael, Keelan, Rev Zondi, Michael?
Thank you very much. You'll forgive me if I call you sir, because I can't pronounce your surname. I'm getting the click right, but I'm not quite there. I was thinking of calling you Little Bird, that can fly faster than anyone else. I must say your qualifications in terms of development studies, I think is very important. South African politics, again, political science is just too philosophical for South Africa, so I enjoy people who study specifically South African politics, your Bachelor's of Arts in Journalism. I think your qualifications are superb. I asked this to someone else earlier because it always does worry me when I see that people have worked for various departments for very short periods of time. Can you tell me why you sort of chopped and changed? Was there a reason? Were you trying to get experience? Why were you at the Department of Labor, then Department of Safety and Security, then Education? And also, I see you at the City of the Tshwane Metro in 2001 to 2005. Now, I was a councillor and chief whip at that time. What did you do at the Tshwane Metro when you were there?
Thank you very much, ma'am. I don't think it was a question of chopping and changing, because my understanding is that when you're working for government, you get transferred as time goes. As you can see on my CV, I started off in government as an assistant director for communications in the Eastern Cape. But after that, obviously, I was promoted and I joined Labour, and then I moved to the Department of Education. I stayed in Tshwane, the city of Tshwane Metropolitan Municipality, for 5 years, 4 months. I left actually at the end of December 2006. Whilst I was there, the general manager for marketing and communications, I got involved in a number of initiatives. The first one being that of developing a 5-year marketing strategy for the whole city in order to market the city as a tourist destination. Also, I was involved in the process that led to the development of the brand infrastructure for the city. I've marketed the city also as a tourist destination internationally. I've also recruited people. I established basically the Department of Marketing and Communications in the municipality, which was non-existent. From scratch up to, as I understand now, that it exists. So I think I achieved a lot when I was there, and I learned a lot as well, because with the municipality, also, you know, there are a number of challenges at that level. You have to report to many people, but also as a municipality, you have to see to it that in terms of communication, you reach residents on the ground, because as you know, that local government is a closer government to the people, and if you want to entrench democracy in any country, you have to make sure that the local municipality is strong, and I contributed towards that.
Nonda.
Thanks, Chairperson. Mr. Nangane, it's very good to interview someone who is out fair with the issues that we are contending with. The MDDA, as you know, is an agency which is charged with promoting media diversity. We are faced with a situation where, on the one hand, we've got dominant established media houses. But we are concerned with, while we're concerned with, they must continue, but we are concerned with the diversification part of it, so that even all communities have got a voice. But we find that the smaller community newspapers, community radio stations, even now community TV stations, are struggling to exist. What, in your view, needs to be done in order to get the established media houses to assist the upcoming, in order to prevent especially the predatory tendencies of the established ones to snuff out the genuine community media entities? I'm sure you know that there are many
so-called community newspapers, which are actually owned by the mainline, and they are dubbed community newspapers, and they are flooded into the communities. But we have got these genuine ones established by people who are struggling on the ground and so on. What, in your view, do you think the MDDA should do to assist them, and what would be your particular contribution as a person who comes from that kind of sphere?
Thank you very much for that question. I think firstly we have to understand that the big companies like your Caston, your Avosa, all of them, they see the production of their publications and newspapers as a business activity. I think they move from that point. It's about making money. It's about collecting what they think our readers want, and they package it so that, you know, it can be then distributed to those readers. It's about getting advertisers on board so that they can obviously, as you would know, some of them, they are listed on the JSE. And I think when once we talk about community media, you are talking about a developmental issue. In most cases, people, development and business objectives tend to clash. With development, obviously, you are looking at issues around building the capacity of those who are involved in that development initiative so that they can actually do what they want to do. So I think that's where the problem is. Firstly, we need then big companies that are owning media to be sensitized so that they can also be developmental in their approach. They need to understand that if they support or they contribute in one way or another towards the development of community news media, that is legitimate, that they will be also making a contribution towards the development of the country as a whole. But again, business people, they will always tell you about the bottom line, they will always tell you about the need for them to reduce production costs, they will tell you about them having to reduce the distribution costs, and so on and on. So they are always trying to make sure that they generate as much profit out of that as possible. However, I think that the community itself firstly has to participate in these community media initiatives. Because, you know, if the community itself is not involved, and there are few people within the community which just drive these community initiatives, they are likely to fail. But also I think that government, which says that it's also advancing a developmental agenda, it is its responsibility to assist those communities so that they can actually have these media initiatives implemented fully. But again, if you look at the budget that is allocated by Parliament to MDDA, I personally think that we are expecting a lot out of MDDA, and yet we are not giving MDDA sufficient resources for it to do what it's supposed to do. You look at the budget for the current 3 years for MDDA, where MDDA would say we will support in the next financial year only 6 community newspapers. But you look at South Africa and how huge South Africa is big. And I'm told that in a year, MDDA sometimes receives requests that go over 150 million rand. But then yet we allocate a mere 45 million rand for operations, for everything that MDDA is supposed to do. And the budget itself that is allocated is not sufficient even just to support even 6 community newspapers fully. So we are actually just... in a way, when I find ourselves moving in circles, we are not going to have the impact that we are supposed to have. Yes, I know that also MDDA is supposed to embark on a program of getting funding from international agencies. International agencies also that want to donate in other countries, not in South Africa, because you see, as you would know, people would say apartheid in South Africa now is no longer there. Let's look at other countries that have got more challenges and so on and on. So I'm saying that it's a bigger problem. The private sector, the companies that own media, they want to generate profit. They are not into development. And as you would know, development really is more like a community thing. And companies, they want to make money. That's where the challenge is. But as my contribution, I think as I go in there, I would be able to assist MDDA still to say, let's develop a well-structured stakeholder engagement program. And let's go out as MDDA still and engage these existing companies and present our case to them and say to them that indeed, as part of their corporate social investment program, let them participate in assisting this community media initiatives in our communities. Thanks, Chair.
Kilen will be next, Sebe and Panderbe. But look, before I go to the next question, all what you have said has been happening. In fact, these big companies, they're in agreement with government. And they've made commitment that they are going to assist in this project or program. The problem we are having is that, for argument's sake, now they are saying they are going to cut their contribution from 1.3 to 1 million. They themselves, the big companies, which you say it must be engaged. But now they are reneging from their commitment. Then what? How do we move forward? I think that's where the crux of the question is, the dilemma, which was these same people, the big companies who commit or make commitment that yes, we want to be part of this transformational agenda, we understand where we're coming from, where we are trying to go with the country, they themselves, they are contributing a million. If you look at the contribution for broadcasters, because there's the legislation, one company but that contributes close to 15 million. This one for print media, 1 million. It means four or five of them, but what do you do with 4 million in the development of the print media? So I think that's the part of the question. What do you do and what will be your contribution? I hear your question, but it has been happening. Even at the high level of government, where they make commitments, we are having this challenge. You can think about that. I'll go to Honorable Kilen. You'll come back to that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes. Actually, I want to probe a little bit further, because for us, sitting with competing needs of the different institutions and knowing full well that we should also look broader at the needs that people have from the government in other portfolios, not only our own portfolio. It would not assist us if you tell us that government must give more money. It must be the MDDA must think out of the box to say, how are we going to get bind in for the development of community media? How would those companies that are currently closing the purse, how would you motivate them to say it is in the broader interest of the country that we have developmental community media? So I think if you could elaborate on that. Yes, from our perspective, if we look at the challenge of the board and board meetings, etc., Your involvement would be at least 4 meetings per year. You've got your own company. We trust that you have the necessary management in place so that you can have your focus on the work of the MDDA. Because in all of these agencies, what is really required is very committed board members. So that the challenges that the MDDA is faced with could actually be discussed and interventions could be made. One of the challenges the MDDA is facing is that if you say you support 3 or 4 community newspaper projects, the long-term viability of those projects, that is the issue. At this stage, what we have noticed is that many of these newly created institutions actually collapse the minute that government finances is stopped. So I think the investment in the real development, also in business skills, and can you please elaborate on how you see your role as far as that is concerned, having had adequate experience of how you resuscitated a sort of a defunct newspaper in the Eastern Cape? Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
I think, again, if the on the side of broadcasting, companies are contributing 15 million because of the act, then we might need to consider that route as well and say, why don't we also look at the MDDA Act and also, you know, amend it so that, you know, the print media can contribute. Because you see, when you persuade people, you always move from a point, you know what you want to achieve as you persuade them. But if they don't want to be persuaded, then they won't do anything about what you are presenting to them. So I think that maybe the root of the legislation also might work, because obviously, you know, if there's an act that says print media contribute X amount, I'm sure they will do it. With regard to the big companies supporting, obviously, you know, community media initiatives, I think the problem also, and I'm going to say this from experience, when we revived Grandstown Voice in Grandstown, it was actually called Elizabeth Assassini as well, and we were about 10. And we were not trained journalists, but also we were fortunate enough because Grahamstown, as you know, has got Rhodes University with a School of Journalism. And other communities don't have that luxury or that good asset that we have in Grahamstown. But also we had the East Cape News Agency, which also had a developmental approach to media. East Cape News Agency led by Frank Kruger at the time. And through the East Cape News Agency and also the Albany Council of Churches, we were able then to come together and say, let's put together fundraising proposals as Grahamstown Voice. We would also obviously generate copies of our proposals and distribute them all over the world through those institutions. But in terms of training, East Cape News Agency and the School of Journalism at Rhodes University trained us on basic, you know, like skills on how to, for instance, organizational skills, how to chair meetings, how to take notes and so on and run the project, you know, the editorial cycle, what does it mean? I'm not sure whether that is happening to other initiatives, let's say in Matatia, because they are far from Rhodes University and there can only be one Rhodes University. So I think we're fortunate in the sense that we had people also who were mentoring us all the time. Even when in producing the newspaper itself, because at that time we were not using the computer, we were doing it manually. We would go out, write articles, and then we had an experienced journalist as well, assisting us with the editing, whilst also we acquiring the skills going forward. So there was like working together on a day-to-day basis throughout the whole process. And I think we acquired skills, because we had also experienced people around us who were guiding us going forward. And I think MDDA might want also to cultivate, but you see the scope for MDDA is huge as well, because it doesn't cover the whole of South Africa. But, you know, they need to generate, you know, a group of ambassadors as well, or a mentor, people who can also assist those who start these initiatives from the beginning. I think, you know, it's something that might have to be looked at. I think Avusa, if I were to make an example of Avusa or any other big company that is owning media in South Africa, I'm sure when they are sitting there, they will say, but why should we support this initiative? Tell us that indeed this initiative is going to be sustainable. Yes, I know that MDDA also is supposed to select projects that are supported using certain regulations that have been developed, which have to be there, as you know, in line with the Act. But again, most people who take these initiatives, you'll find that they are just like the way we were when we revived Grahamstown Voice. They want to do something, but they might not necessarily have the capacity to do some of these things. They might not have skills in financial management. They might not have skills in fundraising. Because they shouldn't also wait only for MDDA to give them money. They should also be empowered so that they can be able to raise funds from other sources of funding as well. Like I said, big corporates also in South Africa that are outside the media sector, they do also have what you call corporate responsibility programs. And I think if a media, guys who are setting up a community newspaper, have the skills of putting together good proposals and doing, you know, convincing presentations to such companies, I'm sure they would come on board as well. So it's a question of skills that might not necessarily be there. And it takes time also to impart skills. We were fortunate because we had those people who were there in that small community and, you know, assisting us going forward. I don't know whether I've answered the question. I think I have.
You have done it to the best of your ability. Honorable President.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good day. My question is in regard to the funding model of MDDA. Are you familiar with the funding model of the MDDA? Currently, is it working? Is it still relevant in the situation that we are in? And fortunately, during your response to other questions, you have mentioned the sufficient funding by government MDDA. By that statement alone, I assume that you are familiar with the MDDA funding. If you can just share with us your own thinking in regard to the current funding model, if there are any changes that you need to change, maybe you can share that with us. Linking to that, if you are any familiar with Section 21 of the MDDA Act, not going through it word by word, just whatever you have kept up about it and linking it to that, will there be any need for us to revisit that act? I'm asking you this question about Section 21 because one person has raised that as a matter that it might be needed for it. We must revisit it. Second teacher person, you have mentioned that it's a question of skill when you responded to the question of the Honorable Killian. So I'm also tempted to ask you this question. What new skill that is not there in the current board of the MDG that you think you will bring? The changes that will bring that you think is lacking there. Lastly, Chairperson, is in regard to the promotion of indigenous languages. What role do you think MDDA must take in doing that? That has not been doing for the past year. Thank you, Chair.
Can I respond? Thank you very much, Chairperson. With regard to languages, I think firstly, you know, it's a fact that in South Africa today, most media, you know, it's in English. That's the dominating language. And it is a fact again that, you know, if you talk about community media, we should encourage that, you know, indigenous languages be used in actually. So I think it's something maybe that should also be included in the regulation, that before MDDA supports any project, that the issue of indigenous languages, especially that it be mentioned also as a key requirement, that if especially a project is started in Toyando, then let's have that project also the indigenous language there being Chivenga. I'm making an example. So I think it's something that should be included in the requirement. With regard to the skills that might be lacking in the board, I'm not sure about the skills that are already there. I can maybe talk about my skills. One of the things that I think is lacking with the MDDA is its visibility. I think for us to be able to achieve what we want to achieve in terms of developing community media, we need to involve all South Africans behind this initiative. At the moment, yes, people know that, some people might know that there is MDDA, but I don't think it has actually elevated the issue of developing community media in South Africa and put it at the center of public discourse in South Africa. I doubt that even in Grahamstown, people know why there should be a community newspaper and why they should participate in that. So I think I'll bring in that skill, a skill of actually raising public awareness about this initiative of developing community media, which is one of the things that is mentioned in the Act that is supposed to be done by MTTA. And I think you don't see a robust kind of engagement of South Africans with regard to that. With regard to Section 21, I must say that I'm not sure as to what it says, so I won't be able to say much about that, that Section 21. I can't remember now the other question, the fourth one. Or the funding model. Yes, that, you know, the media contributes and then government also contributes. You see, I think it's a good thing to involve the private sector in the funding of this initiative. But again, I'm sure it's got its own advantages and it's got its own disadvantages. I'm sure the first disadvantage is that the MDDA is expected, obviously, to lead in bringing about this development of community media, the transformation of the media landscape in South Africa and ensuring that there's diversity. And the MDDA basically is expected to cultivate media that is going to compete directly with the very same existing media that is funding for the same cultivation. So it's a very difficult setup. And also, I'm sure MDDA, it would be very difficult for it to stand in public and say, you, Company X, you are not contributing the way we want you to contribute. Because already, those people are actually funding the work that is done by MDDA. So I think it's a model that needs to be revisited. But also, I wouldn't want to say these community media initiatives must largely depend on government funding. I think they need to be empowered so that also, you know, so that we don't have this dependence on government. Because they must be seen as projects that must be viable, that must be sustainable. I think when you initiate any project, you would put together a business plan and say, this is how I'm going to market this thing that I'm setting up. This is how I'm going to make sure that, you know, I penetrate the market. This is how I'm going to make sure that, you know, the quality of the content is high. So I'm saying that government funding, it should be seen as a funding that may be seed funding. It must be seed funding. But people must demonstrate right from the beginning that whatever that they are starting is not something that's going to die too soon and that they are committed in actually driving that. With regard to me also, I think there's a point that was mentioned earlier on, I think it was the Honorable Member Killian, about me spending time in my company, and I think I missed that point. I didn't respond to it. Yes, indeed, I think I would actually have enough time to make a contribution if I were to be a member of the MDDA. You know why I would want to participate? The very same thing that made me to participate in the late 80s in reviving that community media, newspaper in Grahamstown, I still have it today. I believe also in making a contribution towards the development of my community. And I think the MDDA is charged with a serious responsibility. And if I were to be part of it, I'll be able to make that contribution going forward. Thanks.
Thank you, Vandenberg.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Nikki van der Berg, member of the committee. Just a yes or no. Have you got a plan for to explore new media? It's not really been used by the MDDA up till now. Just a yes or no. If you've got a plan, I'm sure you can give us an explanation for the half an hour. Just a yes or no. Thank you, Chairperson.
I don't have a plan. I don't have a plan. But I do have ideas. I do have ideas. Would you like me to share them?
Are you done with your yes or no?
No, I don't have a plan, but I do have ideas on what could be done when it comes to, you know, new media. I do have ideas.
Okay. But look, I've been listening to you, what you've been saying from the questions from members. In most instances, you are emphasizing the status quo. I'm just thinking, trying to understand what is it exactly which we need to do in terms of making sure that indeed we do have diversity. In a true sense, I'm raising that matter from the understanding that, let's say for argument's sake, because the reality is that
although you've got challenges, or you might have the challenges of in certain instances, in other areas you've got the well-run community newspapers. But the same D company come and run their parallel news, or make sure that they run those ones out of business in a community level. They are not satisfied that they are monopolizing, because to a certain extent we don't seem to have national newspapers now. If you read certain newspapers, although it says national, but you can see the view of a certain provinces and so on, but they are not satisfied. They go down to the community level and run out those competent community newspapers who are surviving. I'm trying to understand what is it which is not right or not doing right. It's one issue, the issue of the Competition Commission, of the predatory pricing, which one member was raising and so on. But I'm trying to find out from you, what is it which be, what exactly which we can change in order for us to be able to do it? Was like your strategy argument, would be say, even then community media want to make money. Because as they run parallel with those community newspapers, what they do, we must remember that the issue of advert on itself is not a transformed terrain. So if this company got the dominance of advert national, when they go to run that parallel, they are also using their power there even to take the advert at that particular level. It's not balanced. And you've got this poor community newspaper, who they are working so hard to try to survive, then people come and use their dominance at whatever level also to deal with that community level and so on. So that's the situation you are at. I'm not denying capacity might be one, skills might be lacking, but there are certain cases where skills is lacking by happening, but they still come and run them out or directly compete with them. The community space. I'm just beginning to understand what exactly we need to do. You're still responding very well to other questions. That's why I'm asking you this difficult question.
It's a very difficult one indeed. I think, you see, also we are saying that in South Africa everyone is free to do business. I think that's an open space for people to do business. It will be difficult for, I think, one, if that's then our understanding, it will be difficult then to say to capital, you know, because I think that's the one that we find with all these newspapers and all these things, Kayelicha, all over the place. It will be difficult then to say to them, but, you know, why am I having a newspaper in Kayelicha? Because you see, it's a free country, okay, and it's a free economy. But again, I know that they've got resources. They have been established for a very long time. They plan properly. They've got also resources to do research and understand the communities that they are getting involved into. But in the process, they destroy good initiatives that are started obviously by people who don't have those resources. It's a big, big, big challenge indeed. I can't sit here and say, I suggest that you then introduce the legislation to say to them they must not go into those communities, because I'm sure there will also be an outcry from somewhere. But I think, you know, obviously it's a free economy, and the issue of competition kicks in. And people will tell you that it's the survival of the fittest, that those community newspapers also, you know, they must also up their own game as you compete. But my view from where I'm sitting is that you need also those people who are starting these initiatives, I think, to be able to think outside the box themselves, to be creative, to establish maybe partnerships, probably to approach, I know, for instance, of one person who established a successful magazine in South Africa Obviously, that person was able to go to an established company and say, let's go, let's establish a partnership. And those, the magazine is existing today, and I think the second one has been launched as well. And now they are talking also now about, you know, starting a radio station as well. So I think, you know, the people who are starting these initiatives, they need to be able also to be strategic enough. They need maybe to be empowered as well so that they can do research and understand, you know, how to engage also these big businesses going forward. So for me, I can't say introduce a legislation and say there are certain areas that you cannot go into because they want community media to thrive. I'm sure people will say that is unconstitutional and so on and on. So, but I think we need to focus at this point the environment, the legislative environment, and even our constitution says, let us try to do things the way we are doing now, unless we change that. And then you say that, you know, indeed you've got the capacity to say, don't get into grandstand, because grandstand is just for community media. So I think it's a difficult thing in that way, Chairperson. I've tried that again, my best.
No, thanks very much for the response, members. That was the last question from my side. That will take us to close to 1 o'clock, I'm sure 5 to 1. We should be breaking for lunch because we can't take any person now. It will take us to almost to something to 2 if we take another person. What time should we be back? Yes, we are running around 45 minutes, 1 hour. Okay, members, let's come back at 2. We'll start again at 2. Honorable woman, please. Maybe before you speak, Mr. Mosno, thank you back. Thank you very much. We are done with the interview.
I would like to say also, take this opportunity and say it has been a great experience for me. I have never been in this setting before. And now I think, because I always watch on TV when people are interviewed for one board or another, and I must say that I really enjoyed it at home. I've been able to explain indeed the content of my submission as I was being nominated for this position. Thank you very much.
Have a safe journey back home. Honorable Bertone?
Sorry, I just wanted to ask you for finishing. I think I have to read a motion inside the house, and then I'll come back after, because I'm not sure you are more acquainted. Maybe I should ask Killian to tell me what comes first, motions, or what he might know better, or you might know. But I think I'll be absent for quite some time.
Killian, you have called for duty. No, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, because I am in the same position as Honourable Mastori. We will have to go to be there for motions, and thereafter it's member statements. And then it's the rest of the orders to follow.
As long as you come back when you finish, because I might have to go and present the committee report on the oversight cases and so on.
Chair, before you extend chair, can we do you mind if we continue and finish? I mean, we left the three people in it in case you love still food, to be honest.
Aye,
we're left
with
nothing, then you're playing games and then
Amanda was told that she was not here, she was still coming.
at 3. So,
we can see one now, then we can see.